Okay, I am streaming right now. Let's see if we have anybody with us in the chat today. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are watching this, we are officially live, and today we have a very, very special guest with us. The realist philosopher.
That's me.
Yes. The realist philosopher, guys, he is a MGTOW OG. He's been with us. How long have you been with us for?
Well, I started producing content back in 2017. So I guess a while. Not one of the oldest, but definitely when MGTOW was getting really, really popular on YouTube.
Yes, and you were one of the more prominent guys on YouTube, but eventually and sadly and unfortunately, and it happens to all of us, inevitably, you got the boot from YouTube.
Yeah,
right?
I had the audacity to say Oprah was fat, which she is, and that was called online bullying. I guess billionaires are now susceptible to the same level of harassment and bullying that a regular person is. And you know, so that was called bullying. That was my third strike, and the two other strikes were some nonsense from YouTube. One of them was about a dishonest thumbnail. And it only takes three. I don't remember what the third one was, but it was something equally spurious. And so they were looking for any and every reason to get rid of me. And so,
do you remember what date it was, or what time frame it was when they did that? When they did you dirty like that? Because they did the same thing to me in September of 2019.
So it was around the end of. Actually, it was. I started producing content in 2016. And so it was like January of 2017. Yeah.
Okay, that was probably during the great demonetization purge,
yes,
where they wanted to get rid of a lot of people. They demonetized Sandman, and I guess they just took you off altogether. How many subs did you have at the time?
About 30,000.
Woo!
But I only had about 8 months, though, to build a following, so... I'm sure I could have gotten a lot more if I'd have been allowed to stay, but meh, these things.
Ah, man, I think they found the guy with the potential. They're like, let us knee him in the cap right now, or you know, hit him in the knees, get rid of him now before he actually gets really big,
yeah,
and does have a following.
Basically, I got a lot of hate too from other MGTOW content producers. Some of the bigger ones, anyway. That at first they were real positive, wanting me to come onto their channels as a co-host and such. I wasn't really interested, so the enthusiasm for my content on their part turned to kind of a derision. What, you don't want to work with us? You think your shit don't stink? That kind of insecure nonsense. And you know, then these people's fans started, you know, brigading my channel and you know, mass flagging, and so it was a lot of nonsense. I just ignored all of it.
Are you at liberty to say those content creators who gave you trouble like that?
I could, but they're some of the bigger ones, and people might not like that too much. So I want to avoid naming names and starting up any new, rigmarole.
I understand.
So,
yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's long in the past.
So since they booted you off of YouTube, did you try to come back on YouTube? Because I came back to YouTube, I'm nothing compared to the way I was in the past. Did you even bother?
I did. I tried twice. I got booted twice. So the first time I came back, and after a month I had like about 3,000 followers. It was kind of difficult because... you know, people, they didn't know where I went, and it was very difficult to keep track of me. And I wasn't as sophisticated on social media as I am now, and I'm still not that sophisticated compared to some of these influencers out there. Comes to them like second nature, like breathing. I'm a little bit of an older guy, so I'm pretty good with tech, but the social media stuff, I guess I'm somewhat sophisticated in the marketing aspects, but, you know, I'm not as good as some of these young kids. And then that got booted after about a month, and then I tried a third time, and that got booted after about 2 weeks. And after that, I was just like, to hell with this, I'm just going to make a podcast, I'll put it on SoundCloud, I'll put it on Apple Podcasts, I'll go to BitChute, where I just created a channel, and of course I wasn't all that savvy at that time. I only started the BitChute channel after I left YouTube, which didn't allow me to cross promote and, you know, let my YouTube followers know that I'm on BitChute if I get booted off of YouTube. So it took me a long time to build a following on BitChute because I didn't use my platform on YouTube to build an audience there.
And that's actually the reason why I still have my YouTube presence, even though Susan is throttling me to the point where it's actually embarrassing. But that's how you get new blood. So
yeah, unfortunately. But I can't be on YouTube. I mean, it's impossible. I can't censor myself. It's something where I try, but it's just I can't do it. I have to speak the truth. I've always been like this. Even if it gets me in hot water, and it has on a regular basis, I speak the truth no matter what. And that's why I got booted off of YouTube. And that's why I would continue to get booted. And that's why I mainly stay on BitChute and your platform where I post any of my feminist, anti-feminist content, MGTOW TV, also a very good site where I post you know, all my stuff talking about things that are related to the gender wars and anti-feminist content. So I stick to those mainly. I tried a couple other platforms like that Brighteon and Rumble, but without the YouTube presence to build an audience there, I'm not getting any kind of real major following. It's just that it's too difficult, too much bandwidth, too much time to upload to all these different platforms. So I just try to stick to a couple now.
Yep, that's a smart idea to do. Stick with what is working. Don't waste time with other platforms that you're not going anywhere with. The good news we have for you is that I think alt tech is actually beginning to gain some steam, not just MGTOW TV, but Rumble, Odyssey. I think Rumble is going to be the one that's going to end up winning the most because they already have apps. They've been around, believe it or not, going on to about 10 years.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So I think in the grand scheme of things, Rumble is going to end up being king. I know some people are back in Odyssey because they fell in love with it before they discovered Rumble. But from what I see, I think Rumble is going to win out. BitChute, from my personal opinion, is Mickey Mouse. A lot of people are on it because they got on it back when they were scared from Susan.
Yeah.
But the reality of the matter is I don't think BitChute is not innovating. I mean, I'm on MGTOW TV every day trying to innovate, yet BitChute is number one, and they're staying on their laurels. They're not innovating. That drives me crazy. I don't know about you.
I think there's some limitations to what they can do. I think their outpost, I think their main headquarters is in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so the United Kingdom is not great when it comes to free speech. So they have to deal with a lot of, nonsense. They're not very censorious, though, which is why I tend to post there and on your site, which doesn't really have any censorship, which is excellent. And why I don't post on Odyssey and Rumble is simply because there's censorship involved, there's shadow banning involved, even on those sites. I make good content. I know I make good content, and yet I can't seem to get views. I posted on Brighteon, and some videos I get zero views, and some I'll get like 300. And it's like, wait.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Wait a second. That's very strange. Why are some of my videos getting no views? And some are getting 300 because they're shadow banning, because they're throttling, because they're hiding some content that their algorithms are telling them is too controversial. So mainly that's why I don't go on those other platforms. It's just a waste of time. My content is too controversial. I actually speak the truth no matter what. And so that means the only places I can post are places like your platform, MGTOW TV, and BitChute, not too many other places.
Yeah, I'm sure you heard of TFM, Third Flinging Monkey, correct?
Oh, I've heard of him. I know
he is. He's actually gaining a lot of subs on alt tech right now. He, like you, he said, F Susan, I'm not going back to YouTube in any form or way. And he's beginning to gain some of his lost glory back on alt tech. So there is potential for alt tech to grow. And I see your channel on MGTOW TV. You know, you're getting a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little. I mean, MGTOW TV is. I'm gonna keep it 100% real with everybody. We are limited, okay? Ever since Scamarona began about 2 years ago, we pretty much kept the same amount of people, which is about 30,000 people come to the site on a monthly basis. At any given time, we have like 30, 40 people on the platform on any given time. I'm actually surprised that we have 7 people viewing this live stream right now on MGTOW TV. I'm actually surprised about that. But this just goes to show you that MGTOW, you know, we are limited. We do have other platforms that we have that I think are going to be a lot more bigger, God willing. But part of the reason why I like to stay limited is that if we get too big too fast, we will go out of business because the reality of the matter is, unless we have money coming in, investor money or money off of ad revenue, which we don't have, you know, we're gonna go, you know, I'll be standing on the side of the road, you know, begging for money to keep this site going. But this is good. This is good. I like how MGTOW is growing. I love the fact how we have all these amazing content creators. You, sir, have been with us, you know, for what, for about 2 years. I'm looking at some of your videos. They go back 2+ years.
Yes. I wish I had joined in the beginning, but I didn't really know about the platform at first. Right when I found out about it, that's when I started uploading all my back catalog of content, which was quite a bit. I think I've got over 600 pieces now on MGTOW TV, so it's quite a bit of content there. I think where you first became more aware of me, we were talking about, you messaged me, we talked about my video about COVID. Yeah, I did a lot of research for that particular video. It was very interesting to find out just how embedded the scamdemic is and how obvious it is if you just do simple math that there is no COVID, that it's a total complete scam, and it's just nothing more than an obscene power grab by the globalists. So that video seemed to be what kind of brought us together and led us to where we're at now, talking about your platform and other subjects in general. Might be some other things you want to ask me about, I don't know, but hopefully.
One of those things, you know, that video that you did about COVID, I mean, that's a video that I've been thinking about. I should have done it, but I just have so many things going on. But what you brought up is that there's not many people dying now compared to a year before Scamarona. So the numbers literally don't add up. I'm just surprised how many people out there have not thought like you did. I mean, the numbers alone, numbers don't lie. So what about,
Well, I just took a look at the global death toll. I said to myself, well, okay, now if COVID is real, we should see a significant uptick in the amount of people dying globally in the years where COVID was supposedly killing the most people. So I took a look at 2020, I took a look at 2021, and I'm like, wait a second, the global death toll didn't increase in relation to a population increase globally. It stayed exactly the same. It was flat. If 4 or 5 million extra people died in a single year, well, you would see, I mean, you were talking 6-7% increase in the global death toll. We would see a significant uptick, and it's just flat. What the hell's going on? Did we suddenly cure cancer? Did we suddenly cure the flu and the common cold? And I mean, what the hell? Did 5 or 6 million less people die in 2021 that allowed 5 or 6 million more people to die of COVID so that it wouldn't show up in the global death toll? I mean, what the hell's going on here? It doesn't make any sense unless you realize that COVID's just a complete and total scam. All they were doing was reclassifying cold and flu deaths and people falling off ladders and heart attacks and diabetes deaths as COVID. That's all it was. And of course, hospitals were incentivized to call as many deaths COVID deaths as possible because they were getting 100,000 bucks a pop for everybody that died in their hospital. It was called a COVID death. Oh, you put somebody in a respirator? Here's $36,000. Oh, you diagnosed this guy with COVID? Here's $13,000. And something people don't know, which I also mentioned in that video, everybody that was treated for COVID in a hospital got Medicare times two. So whatever Medicare's minimal pay rate is per hour to take care of a patient, double it.
Wow. Wow, that is something right there. You got all the information that I myself did not even think of.
Yeah, and it was when I started doing the research, exploring things in a Socratic way, that I discovered that this is all scam. It's just a scam. And the sheeple are buying it because it's coming from the media, it's coming from the government, it's coming from academia, and they've been programmed to believe all this shit. So they're just a bunch of sheeple. They're NPCs, essentially. So, yeah, I wish that video had got more views, but yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly right.
There's so, not a lot of market for truth these days, unfortunately. Lies are more comforting for most people.
That is 100% true. Now, the thing I wanted to ask you is that you're not uploading all your content on MGTOW TV because it may not be related to MGTOW. But what type of philosophy you like talking about?
So I'm very much a student and adherent of Socrates and Aristotle and Ayn Rand. And they both share a lot in common. They all believe that philosophy should serve a practical purpose, that it should be geared towards solving problems in the real world, not exploring questions that have no answers, not putting your heads in the clouds and exploring issues and concepts and abstractions that don't map to reality. So I'm very much a realist, and I'm very much in line with Socrates and Aristotle in terms of logic. And I'm very much a big fan of Ayn Rand also, who is an objectivist and very much in line with Aristotle. So I'm what you would call a practical realist. It's my own school of philosophy. I believe that philosophy should only be used, I think its main purpose, its main focus should be problem solving. Solving problems in the real world, learning how to use your mind in a directed, focused way to advance that goal, to solve as many problems as humanly possible in the real world.
I want to ask your take on what, I mean, I'm ethnically Greek, a little bit on the Greek side. I've been to Alexandria, Egypt, where all the great Greek philosophers were. I would like to consider myself a philosopher, but I would not call myself a philosopher in any form or way when I know there are people like you, even Stephen Molyneux. I mean, I don't know much philosophers myself. I mean, I know you. I know Molyneux. I listen to him every now and then. He seems really good. Now, can you tell us what makes a person a philosopher? Also, I want to go out. I want to grab something really quick because the people in the chat are saying the audio is not that good, so I'm going to grab something really quick to make the audio better.
Okay.
So if you gave me 3 minutes, you have the whole thing to yourself. Tell us what makes a philosopher, rather than having somebody like me come by and say, hey, guys, I'm a philosopher.
Okay.
I'm like, what? Thank you, got it. Cool.
All right, I'm going to grab a cup of coffee, and then I'll explain it.
Sounds good, guys. Give us a couple of minutes, guys.
Right, we're gonna try to it will take me but 5 seconds.
Same here, man. Same here. Give us a couple of seconds, people. We're going to get the sound back. Patient. 3 minutes. I'll be back in 3 minutes.
Is a necessity for me. So, what makes a philosopher? So, to answer Amar's question, what makes a philosopher is, number one, a deep and abiding appreciation for truth above all else. You have to be someone that is very self-aware because it requires a high level of self-awareness not to allow your biases to affect your arguments, let alone the conclusions that you come to. So a very high level of self-awareness is number one. Well, number two, actually, a deep abiding appreciation for truth. Number one, a high level of self-awareness so that your truth is not the truth that you observe, the truth that you perceive, the conclusions that you come to are not tainted by biases that you are not aware are tainting your conclusions, your arguments, because you are lacking in self-awareness. So appreciation for truth, high level of self-awareness. Also, a very highly developed understanding of logic. So it's very important that one understands how reality works. I'm not an ivory tower philosopher. Ivory tower philosophers are people who go to universities and teach in universities and talk about meaningless profundities and just prattle on about things, waxing profound about nonsense that is in no way, shape, or form connected to reality. So for me, a philosopher is somebody who has a deep understanding of how the real world works, values experience as a teacher above all else, and is extremely good at integrating the information that comes from the outside world via their perceptions and filtering out the nonsense, filtering out the minutiae, as it were, coming to right and correct conclusions about what is true and what is false by applying critical thought and logic to what their perceptions tell them. So deep and abiding appreciation for truth, high level of self-awareness, and a very well-developed understanding of how to form arguments, how to spot logical fallacies, and overall just a deep understanding of epistemology, which is essentially what you could call, most people do simplistically, the philosophy of logic, or how to identify truth from fiction, fact from falsity. So those are three or four things that I think make a decent philosopher.
All right, that's a good couple of things you brought up. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is that I remember long time ago when I was driving cab in L.A., I picked up a Jewish guy, and I was taking him to synagogue. Really nice guy, very charismatic, and he told me, Amar, you know what you should take in college? You know, back then I was actually going to Pasadena City College, and I'm like, I should take politics, I should take economy. He said, no, take literature. And I'm like, literature? What am I going to do? I'll become a lefty liberal? He told me something I never, ever forgot. Big words scare small people.
Yeah, well, there's something in that if they are not the most intelligent or learned people, if you're using what to them are big words, it means they just don't understand what you're saying. So that can intimidate some people.
Do you think the way things are right now with the whole, you know, bullying people to wear masks and shit like that, do you think that most people, I've been told, and I don't know if this is true or not, I'm sure if anybody can answer it, it will be you. Is it true if you treat most people like they were 12 years old, they would actually act like a 12-year-old, even though they might be, you know, 30, 40, 50, 25?
In the context of the situation, yes. If you have every single, basically, if you have every single institution that you have been programmed since birth to believe as authorities telling you to act a certain way, then you will act that way within the context of the situations that you might be put in. So, for example, this is what we call an argument from authority. And this is what we've got going on a lot in America right now. This fake news, this authoritative news sources, sources these are confirmed true. These are authorities. Well, that's an argument from authority fallacy. And a lot of people right now buy into this, and they've been trained since birth to do so because they're raised by the state. They're raised by the schools. They're raised by the politicians that fund those schools, and these schools are populated by liberals, mostly female teachers who went to university to specifically become. Did we lose the picture?
Oh, no. Oh. I actually had to go out and sit in my car because they were saying that they were not. I was wearing a headphone, and apparently they could not hear you all that well. So I had to sit in my car, take the headphones off. And, you know, instead of people seeing me sitting in the car with the lights off, I'm like, you know what, just take the picture off because, okay. You know, yeah,
that's
lights
fine.
Are off. It's, yeah. But continue saying with what you were
so
saying.
They can hear me now. Okay.
Yeah, they can hear everything fine. They had
Okay,
a
great.
hard time before. Now they're saying in the chat it's perfect.
Great, great.
And I told them that you have a master copy of all this, so when we upload it, God willing, later on, you're going to have all the sound from the first minute. So everything.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy that's got both of us, and the sound is synced to be the same level, so it'll be fine.
Amazing, yeah.
So what you have to understand is that everything that's going on right now is scripted. It's all planned. None of this is accidental.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the left, when you look at people like Biden, when you look at people like Pelosi, and you look at people like Kamala Harris, and you think, these are the stupidest fucking people I've ever seen. How could they be making this many fucking mistakes? How could people this stupid have gotten into the positions they're in? Well, it's not an accident. They're not stupid. They're doing what they're told. Because mm-hmm. they're shills. They're nothing more than puppets. And the things they're doing are quite purposeful. And while you may think that they're stupid, and a lot of people think that all the mistakes that are occurring, the inflation and the ridiculous gas prices and the bugging out of Afghanistan, leaving behind $85 billion worth of weapons and $100 million in cash for the Taliban, people are sitting around thinking, oh, this is all a big error. Biden, he's senile. Well, yeah, he's senile. But that's besides the point. That's not why this shit's happening. I mean, that's why he makes a perfect fucking puppet, you know? He doesn't know where he is half the fucking time. But, you know, no, this is all quite purposeful. He was put in office, Kamala was put in office, and if you think they got into their offices via anything except cheating, you're kidding yourself. If you think all those swing states that went the way of Biden, when at like 10 o'clock, it was like Trump had the majority of votes, and then, you know, 3% of the vote gets counted 3 hours later, and it's now shifted dramatically toward Biden. You're kidding yourself. That didn't happen, okay? He obviously cheated. But these people are in their positions of power and authority to implement a plan. And that plan is globalism. And everything that's happening now, everything we're seeing, is geared toward a one-world government, a world without nations that is ruled by a small group of people that are essentially disseminating the same fiat currency. So instead of having 300, 400 different currencies, they'll just be one currency. And the people that print the money are the ones that control the world. So the way people think right now, the way they act, the things that many of them believe are based on the fact that they have been turned into NPCs. So you ask, you know, if somebody's treated like a 12-year-old, will they act like a 12-year-old? Absolutely. If they've been raised by the state, which wants nothing more than tax chattel, which wants nothing more than obedient slaves who will own nothing and be happy, says Klaus Schwab. Of course, will he own nothing? No, he'll own everything. Yeah, but will he own nothing? No, he'll have everything. Will he be happy? He'll be real fucking happy. Will you be happy? No. But that appeals to some people, that kind of living in a pod, eating bugs type of life. Some people see nobility in that. Some people see virtue in that. I don't. I don't want to eat fucking grasshoppers and grubs and shit and own nothing. I don't want to have to use a blender and then I go online and rent the fucking blender and then I send the blender back the next fucking day because it's not my blender and I'm not allowed to own anything, but I should be happy. So
yeah, one thing you brought up about living in pods, you probably know this. In Japan, they actually live in pods. A friend of mine, you know, I met him here at Starbucks. He went to Japan and he lived in pods. He was paying like $23-$24 a night to live in a pod. He said it was clean, it was beautiful, it was amazing. He loved it. All it is simply a bedroom, just a small bed. It's a cot, really, but it's clean. He said for the 2 weeks, he loved it. Now, long term, I don't know if anybody would want to do that, but I can see people living in a pod, and the question is, it's already there, but the question is, will they put up with it forever?
Yes, yes, yes. The way we're going right now, yes. People are being gradually reprogrammed, gradually attuned to having their bodily autonomy encroached upon ever more. I mean, just look at these mask mandates and these vaccine mandates. I mean, you got to get a fucking shot that isn't even a vaccine. Technically, people don't even know what fucking words mean anymore. A vaccine actually has an inert form of the virus in it to trigger a response from your body to create antibodies. These are not vaccines. They're experimental drugs, and they were never given the okay by the Food and Drug Administration. This is all experimental. They don't have any real studies, and they're trying to hide the information. They're not going to release what information they do have for like 70 years or some shit. And they're totally completely off the hook when it comes to liability. You can't sue
Oh,
these
yeah.
people. I mean, if you grow a second head or your mother dies from one of these fucking experimental drugs, you can't sue them. So, I mean, it's really ridiculous. So we are being trained to accept ever more encroachment upon our bodily autonomy and upon our freedom. And this is what the left does. And it's also the fault of the right. It's also the fault of rational, reasonable people because they compromise. The left takes in, the left wants 10 feet. And the right says, no, that's too much. And the left is like, okay, just give us an inch. Give us an inch. Be reasonable and just give us 1 inch and then we can compromise. And the right is like, eh. So-called conservatives are like, okay, we'll give you an inch. And then the people on the right think they won, not understanding that the people on the left only wanted an inch to begin with. And year by year by year, they take an inch more until your freedom is gone.
Do you think the Republicans and the Democrats are two sides to the same coin?
Yes, for the most part. There are some exceptions, people like Rand Paul. Ron Paul, but it's like maybe less than 1% of politicians are people that actually serve their constituents. The rest are just frauds and phonies, pretending to be something that they're not when they're the Republicans. And the Democrats, well, you know, they don't try so hard to be, you know,
Yeah,
they don't try so hard to hide their motives. They don't
not
have to. They're giving away free shit. They can be as transparent as humanly possible. Yeah, we're big Marxist commie pinko scumbags. You got a problem with that? No. We're getting welfare cheddar, so we're perfectly okay with you being big Marxist commie scumbags as long as you give us our welfare check. So, yeah, I think they're both the same. I think for the most part, they're both two sides of the same coin.
Now let me ask you this question. What did he do before you got on YouTube? What did he do before 2017? I mean, you are very articulate
Well, thank you.
about what's going on. I mean, you sound like you might have been like super duper college educated, as far as we might know.
Yeah, I did. I am a very educated person, but I don't like to talk about it because I don't think it's necessarily important. I don't like to reinforce fallacies by focusing too much about on you know, authoritarian qualifications. So while I might have them, I don't really discuss them too much. But I own my own, I lived in China for about 14 years where I owned my own business.
Woo!
And yes.
Tell us about that. I never knew that about you until now. I was actually thinking at one point of visiting China. Right now, probably not a good idea, but China is always on my list. Please tell us everything you have to tell us about China.
Well, I don't want to get into the particulars of my business because that would make it
Okay,
very easy to find out who I am. But I can speak around that and give you a lot of information tangentially.
Absolutely.
So I lived there for about 14 years, and I really actually loved it. One of the great things about China is that they tend to leave you alone. The authorities, at least they used to, not anymore. But there was a golden time in China there between about 1996 to 2017, where you pretty much could fly under the radar and do just about whatever you wanted, minus selling drugs or smuggling in gun parts. You know, you get caught with the piece of a yeah, you get come caught with the firing pin from a gun in China, they'll put a bullet in your fucking head. But otherwise, no drugs, no weapons, you're good. And by the way, not no weapons. They still use swords in China. I can remember one night looking out my window, and there were about 100 gang members out in the street, all armed with swords. So, that kind of shit still happens in China, gang wars and shit, where they fight with swords, believe it or not. You imagine looking out your fucking window, and there's like 150 guys, you know, part of different gangs fighting it out in the street. That shit does actually happen still in China.
Well, I mean, the good thing about that is that you don't have to worry about a stray bullet killing an innocent person, I guess.
Precisely, yeah, you're probably going to kill who you want to kill.
Yeah.
So, I really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed the Chinese women. I'll speak on that briefly. First of all, let me just say the Chinese women are not very different from American women. You guys out there that have it in your head that if you go to a foreign country, you're going to meet these staunchly traditional women who are going to live up to some kind of a feminine standard, it's not going to happen. China has been infected by feminism, just like America. And in point of fact, the Communist Party infected China with feminism way, way back after World War II. All feminism really is cultural Marxism. And so they implemented cultural Marxism in China. They encouraged the women to go out to work. They put the one-child policy in place because they're morons and they believe in the Malthusian fallacy that you can actually have such a thing as overpopulation. It's totally, completely, 100% impossible. If you have enough steel and metal and car parts to make 100 fucking cars, you make 100 fucking cars. You can't make 110 cars when you only have enough resources to produce 100. So this whole Malthusian idea is fucking retarded. And these idiots that ginned up the one-child policy in China, they're just that. They're fucking morons. But anyway, they did everything they could to equalize the sexes so they could maximize tax revenue. But in turn, what they ended up doing was minimizing their population to such an extent where now they have removed the one-child policy and they're begging the women, babies. And the women are like, nah, that's okay. We don't want to do that. We want to keep working. And, we've seen all of the Western TV shows about female empowerment and Sex in the City and all that shit. So, we want to be Miranda from Sex in the City. And so, if you think you got to go to China and find a unicorn, you're wrong. It's not going to fucking happen. But the women there do like Western men. So, you like Asian poon. Go to China, you'll get laid to your heart's fucking desire. It's like shooting fish in a fucking barrel. It's no problem.
All right, guys, you heard it here first. If you are a Westerner, especially if you got JBW on your side, which according to Incel TV, just be white, you're gonna have all the Asian poon you can stick your you know what in, guys. So.
Yeah, just don't think you're going to find a unicorn that you can marry and bring that back to America. Because even though she might act like a traditional proper lady while you're in China, which is unlikely to happen, once you bring her back to your home Western country, she's going to morph and transform from Dr. Jekyll into fucking Hyde almost immediately. So
Yeah, God.
Don't expect to find a unicorn over there. As for the people, I like them. They were very curious and friendly and extremely hardworking, very conscientious. Although one of the drawbacks of the Chinese people is that they're very collectivistic in mindset. This is part of what's spelled the death knell of my business. Excuse me. Because once certain, I'm not going to name names, but certain people got into power around 2017. The opinion of Americans in China started to shift. So if our president in America is horrible and evil and, making things more difficult in China, then all Americans are horrible and evil. So that's the way the Chinese view the world. They're not the most individualistic of people. They're very collectivist in nature and how they view the world. So that's one of their major drawbacks. But overall, I found them to be very easy to live among. It helped that most of them don't speak English.
Of course, yeah.
But
I was gonna say a replacement to China, I think, would be Vietnam. I visited Vietnam before Scamarona. I loved it. In fact, one of the developers I'm working with on MGTOW TV right now, he's Vietnamese. I think Vietnam is a replacement for China. The only negative thing I can say about Vietnam is that their women are not as beautiful as Chinese women. I don't know what your take on that would be.
Well, the Chinese are a little more developed.
Yeah.
They're not as developed as America. I believe that two-thirds of the Chinese population still live in poverty, and most of them are farmers, and most of them are farming with hand tools. So, yeah. But one-third of their population is middle class or near middle class, living in cities and well-developed areas. So when you look at their, upper one-third, that's still greater than the population of America. Now, they're still not as economically developed. And you got a lot of people saying, well, Reader's Philosopher, oh, they have now outstripped America. Their economy is now bigger than ours. Yeah, well, look at the retards we got in power and how they've been destroying the fucking country and the economy. And also, hello, China's got almost 5 times the population, pinheads. So I mean, oh, yeah, well, their economy is as big as ours or a little bigger now. Yeah, they got 5 times the people. And they're still only able to amass about the same amount as well of wealth, maybe a little more than we are. And that's only because we sent most of our fucking manufacturing jobs over there. And that money that they've gotten rich off of is our money. So don't be that impressed, okay, with their economy. But, yeah, they are more developed than Vietnam. So that has something to do with the beauty of the women. A better diet, a better nutrition, a better standard of living contributes a lot to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, are you into geopolitics, like right now, the situation with Ukraine and Russia? If you have any hot take on that, we'd all love to hear it.
I just posted a video on my channel. I hope you don't mind if I mention my BitChute channel.
Of course, go for it, yes.
So I just posted a video about what's actually happening and what Putin's actual motivations are. At bitchute.com/therealistphilosopher. That's bitchute.com/therealistphilosopher. I suggest you go there, follow me. I think you might actually like BitChute a lot. My hot take is that I think Putin is, for the most part, doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that might come across as unpopular to a lot of people, but I've been following Putin for a while, and what I can tell you about the guy is that he's a staunch nationalist, that he very much loves his country. He will do everything he can to protect it, and when he has a country on his border that is threatening to join the EU, threatening to join NATO, has adopted woke SJW, LGBTQ ideologies, and also there's a lot of Nazism in the country right now. When you have that kind of country on your doorstep that is ready to be taken into the EU, taken into NATO, armed to the fucking teeth, nukes on your border, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. What are you going to just sit there and say, oh, well, you know, I'll let them put nukes on my border? I mean, hell, back in the 60s, America didn't even let that happen. You have Khrushchev. Those behind the red curtain motherfuckers threatening to put nukes in Cuba. We almost started World War III with nukes. All the bells and fucking whistles, yet Putin does the same thing. Oh, that's bad, that's evil. When America almost starts World War III, by the way, why haven't we invaded fucking Cuba and kicked out the Castro family? It's because we want as many fucking boogeymen as possible lurking around out there on our fucking borders to distract our citizens away from the real fucking issues that are going on inside the country. But, it's okay for us to defend our interests, to invade Iraq, which wasn't even in our own interest. Let's kill 500,000 people in Iraq. Sure, why not? Why? No reason. Just to put some money into the pockets of the global elites, into the pockets of the warmongers. Let's invade Afghanistan. Why? Because 19 dudes hung out there. Oh, because the Taliban was being sheltered there. So let's bomb the country into oblivion and kill 500,000 people. Why not? Oh, that's good. That's great. That's okay. Let's invade Libya. Let's kick out the rulers there and bring fucking slavery back to there. You can go there and buy a fucking black man for $150. Hell, you can buy him for $100 if you haggle well enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go into Syria and all that. Yeah, let's go into all these countries and destabilize them and kill hundreds of thousands of people to protect our so-called interests in America. Let's be Obama and kill American citizens without trial, without due fucking process. Meanwhile, Putin kills some fucking journalist supposedly with polonium, and we don't even know the whole fucking story. Oh, and he's the boogeyman. But Obama is killing, how many American citizens without due process? Oh, that's okay. He's a black man. That's okay.
Yeah, he killed an American citizen with a drone strike.
Yeah. I mean, the hypocrisy is so thick you could cut it with a fucking knife. But basically, I think he's acting in his own best interest, and I think what he's doing is, for the most part, good and right. Do I agree with some of the moves that are happening, like a fucking hospital getting bombed? No. But in the large scale, he's fighting the globalists. The globalists.
He is. And one of the questions we need to be talking about as MGTOW as a whole is, what the hell are we going to do? Because I don't think things are going to come out good on the other side. Not anytime soon. I think things might even get worse. I mean, gas is like $5 now, and it's probably going to be a lot higher.
Oh, yeah. It's going to get up to 10 or 12 and more. Yes, absolutely. That's part of the plan. So what you have to understand is that you should own nothing but be happy, right? Well, yeah. The whole point of all of this is to impoverish the Western world as much as humanly possible and to bankrupt us so that our economies collapse, our governments collapse, and then in comes socialism, in comes the government, in come the globalists to save the day and make you as dependent as possible upon the government, which is why you see all these price increases. Like I said earlier in the show, this is all purposeful to serve a specific end goal.
So the question that we have to be asking at this point is that with everything that's going on, do you have any exit plans to leave the country? Maybe you're going to do what TFM said, go live in Alaska. Do you have any emergency plan B that, you know, break the glass in a case of emergency?
Well, I thought about this, and, you know, I initially was living my plan overseas a little over 2 years ago, but that got the kibosh, unfortunately. These things happen. I have invested in crypto. That might end up blowing up on my face. You've got the government. You've got Western governments coming down on crypto, trying to take control of it. Exit plans. I mean, I've thought about the exact same thing. Going and living off the grid, finding ways to make money that can either be, you know, outside of the normal everyday. Yes, I do have exit stratagems in my head. Not going to get into them
of course,
too much.
Yeah.
But yes, I have put a lot of thought into those kind of things. Yes, for sure.
Now you're out. I know you're. You know, out of the location that you are in right now. Like for example, Florida, where I am in small town USA. I hate to say this, but this is probably the best place in the world to be right now, where I am in small town USA. Wherever you are in the world right now, do you feel that the area that you are in is going to be okay? Okay, or is it going to be like New York? Hell no, let's get the FECK out of here.
Okay, so I have no problem saying where I am because it's a big major city, and good luck finding me. Talk about a needle in a fucking haystack of needles. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, so it's one of the biggest cities in the country. Do I think things are going to get worse here? They're going to get worse everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of degrees. So here it might be less worse than in a place like New York. Coastal cities have always tended to be highly liberal. You got a lot of pinhead artists living there. You got a lot of cosmopolitan morons who have traveled to many different countries, got a lot of ideas in their fucking head. They're not very well grounded, so these kind of people tend to end up settling in coastal cities. And they tend to have relativistic mindsets, especially when it comes to morality. So that's why you have a lot of idiocy going on in coastal cities. As far as Phoenix, Arizona goes, it's more of a red area. Guns are very much in vogue here, both open carry and concealed. There's not a lot of restrictions on that. So I think things will be less worse here than in other places because you can legally pack heat. unlike in New York City.
Yeah.
But things are going to get bad here as well. I'm not looking forward to it. Gas here, I think, is about $4.50 now. I very much see it getting up to $10 a gallon. Not too far off. So, yeah, it's going to get crazy bad, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's going to be depressing to talk about the future, especially when we don't know exactly how bad or exactly what to really do. I mean, I don't want to depress the audience. Let me ask you this. Before you got into the whole philosophy, what were you doing? What brought you into this path? I mean, we want to know what made you say, you know what, because you obviously have staunch points that you believe in. You articulate them really well. I mean, I like I said, I'm similar to you in a way. You know, there I know for a fact there has to be a path. You know, maybe it started when you were like 10 years old or even younger than that, something made you the great philosopher you are today, but it happened back at a very young age. Can you tell us about that, if applicable?
Sure. Yeah, well, it's absolutely applicable. I don't know that I would call myself a great philosopher. I think I'm more in line with just what an average everyday, well, when there were more philosophers in the world, would be. Somebody who's very much concerned with reality and understanding it as well within the context of the world we live in as possible. There was, yes, my childhood was a very fraught one. My father was a major drunk and very abusive. My mother was a very, shall we say, accepting person of this. She was a malignant narcissist who didn't really care about other people other than herself, as long as she was comfortable. As long as he wasn't, as long as my drunken idiot father wasn't beating on her, she's okay. You're beating up the kids? Well, that's all right. It's not me. So, you know, my early years were very imperiled. I'll tell you the truth. I'm lucky to have gotten out alive, honestly. And my early childhood was very unstable, but I never viewed it as a negative. Let me explain. So I don't know if this was just predetermination genetically, how I was, or if it was just a choice I decided to make based on any number of factors, IQ or just natural disposition. But I decided very early on, you know, this is not a victim situation. This is a learning situation. You know, my life is, you know, fraught with danger and peril just at home. Can't trust anybody, even the people that are supposed to be closest to me. But I'm not going to view it in a negative way. I'm going to be positive throughout, and I'm going to make the best of a bad situation. I'm going to take all the lemons that are getting hurled at me, and I'm going to turn them into lemon fucking aid. And that was my mindset from very early on. And if anybody out there grew up in an abusive household, what you understand from the get-go is that you have to develop a very flexible approach. You have to be very adaptable. You have to learn how to adapt at a moment's notice. You have to become very good at reading people. You have to become very good at understanding people. Because if you don't, you're going to get the crap beaten out of you for saying or doing the wrong thing, and then you might die because you're 7 years old and you got a big 300-pound gorilla motherfucker beating on you and using you as a fucking punching bag. So from very early on, I suppose I was being trained as a philosopher without even realizing it by growing up in a very perilous situation that I was constantly having to be on my toes, constantly thinking to have to avoid the pitfalls and the traps that were in my path, purposely put there by others. So it was a contest and a battle of wills, in a sense, to survive. And I got alive, and with a very powerful set of skills that allowed me to have a high level of discernment, a high level of self-awareness, and a high level of understanding of other people. And you can't really understand other people very well if you don't understand yourself well, because for the most part, you are a reference point. You are the first point of reference when it comes to understanding other people. Okay, if this happens to me, what would I do? How would I react? What would I think? And so then you use that as a way to then understand the thoughts and the feelings of others. So before you have understanding of others, you have to have understanding of self. And once you develop a high level of self-awareness, then you know what your strengths and your weaknesses are, and you can focus as much as possible on developing said strengths as well as said weaknesses. So even though my early years were very in some people's minds, you would call traumatic. I never looked at it that way. I never looked at it as a negative. I never saw myself as a victim. And it was a very strong, very powerful teaching environment to turn me into what I am today, which is, yes, a philosopher, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to say that your life growing up seemed to be tumultuous?
Yes.
Would that be the right word for it?
That would be the correct word, yes, in a nutshell, yeah.
Okay, now how would be your life like right now versus your tumultuous years? Have you found that sweet spot where you like found peace?
I came to terms with those things a very long time ago. So obviously, no matter how much I was able to turn a negative, or what most people would see as a negative, into a positive, yes, there were some after effects of many of these, what most people would consider horrific experiences. But I dealt with them and integrated them, and no, they have no effect on me today, one way or another. Meaning I'm not biased in my decision making or thought processes in regards to how I view the world or the conclusions that I come to.
Okay, now how often, I mean, you take me for example. I go to like cafes all over because I live in small town USA. It gets boring, so I see a lot of people. Are you the same thing whereby you go work at maybe Starbucks or some coffee place? You get to like observe people? Because I observe and I report back to people on MGTOW TV with what I see, and I'm getting disgusted more and more with what I see. I don't know how you view the world. Maybe you have it better in Phoenix than I do.
No, I talk a lot about the in the now this stuff doesn't get posted to my BitChute channel, bitchute.com/therealistphilosophy. You have to listen to my podcast in full. But at the start of each podcast, I do a monologue. And generally, I talk about what's been going on in the past week in my life on a personal level in between shows. And yeah, I'm disgusted by what I see as well. I don't like the social reconstructivism that I'm seeing and the radical individuality that people like Jordan Peterson are such a big fan of. And I see it going on everywhere. And it really irks the shit out of me, the way people are acting toward each other and themselves and the degenerative effect it has on us as a country, as a whole, as a people. No, you're not alone. You're not alone, my friend. I am disgusted as well by what I see.
When I was in Romania a couple of months ago, I was at the airport in Bucharest. This was end of November. I was coming back to America, and I see like all sorts of promotions for Jordan B. Peterson. He was going to come to Bucharest along with other people, and they were going to do this conference on, life and what have you. We all know Jordan Peterson got his start by criticizing the whole 57 gender thing and saying there's only male and female, him and her. But do you th I can't speak for you, but I'm beginning to think that Jordan Peterson kind of sold out a little bit if he's going mainstream.
Jordan Peterson is what I would call controlled opposition. I've been following him for a long time, since the beginning. And Jordan Peterson is a soft leftist. And what I mean by that, he's not your radical, in-your-face, Kool-Aid-colored hair, blatantly beta male, embracing feminism so he can get some poon because he's such a pathetic loser, he couldn't get it any other way type of individual. He's more of a soft leftist, and he does disagree with feminism to a large extent. He's very anti-feminist, but the talking points that he embraces and throws out there are not anything that would counter the left's agenda, the globalists' agenda. The globalists use Marxism and socialism, and in turn, communism. One goes, from Marxism comes socialism, and from socialism comes communism. And they use these tools to deconstruct and destroy countries to advance their globalist ends. So socialism, communism, Marxism are just tools for them. And feminism is one example of cultural Marxism. And he's more of a soft leftist, but he is a leftist. Okay, he did work for the UN. He did work specifically on the language of the UN and their goals and their agenda to make their writings less Marxist sounding. He believes in white privilege. He believes in racial privilege. He believes in radical individualism, which, if you don't know what that is, it's an aspect of postmodernism. It's this view of the world that believes that everything is down to individual choice. There's no determinism whatsoever. In fact, it's kind of the exact opposite of hard determinism. And that when you are a radical individualist, you believe that everything is human choice. There is no biological imperative. There is no biological predetermination. Whatever entities exist, whatever organizations and institutions exist, these are all down to personal choices. And if you follow that to its logical conclusion, radical individualism also believes that people can, you know, so whatever you believe you are, you can have things like your truth, your gender, your sex, your racial identity. All of these things are up to individual choice. It essentially is a school of thought that teaches that, you know, objective reality outside of the person, outside of the individual, outside of the choices we make doesn't actually exist. And he's a fan of this and he promotes this. So Jordan Peterson is controlled opposition. He spouts some things that sound good to people on the right and make them believe that he's a force for good, that he's on their side. But the truth of the matter is, he's not. The real agenda that he's pushing is the postmodernistic, radical individualistic view of the world. And he does that by pretending to be more moderate, more centrist, and more reasonable. But that's just so that the lemmings on the right will accept him. And then he can infiltrate and get past their defenses, weasel his way in with his radical individualism bullshit.
You know what makes me believe what he said 100%? He called MGTOWs weasels,
yeah.
And then he apologized when we took had a backlash against him. That makes me believe that he's like, okay, I went up against these people. They didn't roll over like I expected. You know, they're going to fight back. So let me act like a nice guy so they can continue watching my videos.
Yeah, I made a video about this. I think it's on MGTOW TV and my BitChute channel. Yeah, you'd have to scroll back a ways. It's old. But yeah, absolutely, absolutely. He panders to the crowd. There's a lot of other things I don't like about Jordan Peterson. He doesn't practice what he preaches. I mean, this fucking guy, he was, what was he, in a, how long was he in a fucking coma? He was a drug addict, drug addict who almost died. He had to be put into a chemically induced coma to wean himself off the drugs that he had purposefully, by choice, addicted himself to. He goes on his fucking podcast. His room is a fucking disaster. Clean your room! And then you look at his fucking room in the background. It looks like a fucking hurricane struck that motherfucker. He's got fucking piles of trash and paper stacked to the fucking ceiling. And it's like, wait a second. Is this the same fucking guy that preaches clean your room? I mean, okay, hey, he might be a busy fucking guy, but come on. You're doing a podcast here. You can't clean up your fucking room. I mean, even I clean my fucking kitchen so that my background at least looks presentable. This fucking guy, his house looks like a fucking disaster, but I'm supposed to listen to him when he tells me to clean my fucking room? That's like a 500-pound guy telling me to go on a fucking diet, and he could tell me how. Get the fuck out of here. No. I think he's a big fucking phony, is what I think.
That's one of the things that that's one of the reasons why I don't take much stake in people because they might end up being a phonies. And this is one of the reasons why I love MGTOW TV. I know everybody here is real. You're real. TFM is real. Sandman is real. Terrence Pop is real. Line of MGTOW, RPM, Rare Breed Theory, Hammerhand, you know. I'd like to think that everybody, you know, that the most prominent people, most people on MGTOW TV are real. And this is one of the reasons why I seldom go back to YouTube. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our content creators and, you know, a guy who's been supporting the platform for the longest time, for Archangel, he actually uploaded, have you heard of Mike, was his name Michael Beck? I forgot his name. The guy behind Generation Y. This guy over here for Archangel, he actually uploaded all his content. The guy passed away, I think, to cancer a couple of years ago. We really missed him. But this is what for Archangel had to say. He said his degree was from UConn in philosophy. The study has been reduced to postmodernism precept. The ancients seem to have been much more well-rounded as people living in an abstract world.
Yeah, modern philosophy isn't actually philosophy. So philosophy has been co-opted by the universities, by the humanities departments to teach ideologies. And that ideology is left-leaning. And it's postmodernistic. and radically individualistic in nature. So philosophy isn't taught as a way of learning to identify truth, understand the foundations of how to build truth, understand reality, gain self-awareness, to solve problems. It's just a way of front-loading NPC leftist knowledge into people. It's just an ideological indoctrination course now. If you study philosophy in school now, you won't learn anything about actual philosophy. You're just going to learn ideology. And it's a very big difference. The difference is that ideology comes from philosophy, but philosophy does not come from ideology. Ideology is the end result of applying philosophy, but it is not philosophy itself. So most people who go to university to study philosophy, they don't really learn anything about understanding reality or using the mind. As I like to say, philosophy is a tool of the mind to better understand reality. They don't learn any of that. They just learn a certain set of supposedly predetermined truths that they then take into the world with them to act upon. Hence, they become professional activists, not only in their personal life, but also via their work, their job. That's what they're taught. So philosophy is just a way of, nowadays, universities of creating activists.
Mm-hmm. This question that just popped into my mind, I've been meaning to ask it for the longest time, and I think you'd be the best person to answer it. Why is it that there are a lot of young women out there who suffer from borderline personality disorder, mental illness? Why are they so adamant about going into psychology, going and becoming a psychiatrist, getting their master's, maybe even PhD? Why is it that the most unstable people are trying to become the authority on your well-being?
Well, that has a lot to do with cure thyself. So a lot of these people are indeed unstable and have mental health issues. And many people who have these kind of issues, they go into psychology, into psychiatry, if you're talking about going to medical school, or maybe just into psychiatric nursing, but they go into mental health fields because they themselves have issues that they want to better understand. And many of them think that because they've been through these experiences that created said mental illnesses, that they have some kind of special insight. And that if they just study psychology, if they just study human behavior, if they just study mental illness, they can cure themselves. And they will have a more focused and systematic way of helping other people via their insight into mental illness via having lived through experiences that create it.
That was profound, what you just said. I would have never thought about that in a million years. I thought these girls were going in there just so they can say, hey, I'm the authority, you're the crazy person, remember? But what you just said about them going in there thinking that they can repair themselves and have some sort of messiah complex, that I would have not guessed it in a billion trillion years.
Yeah, there's also a sense, there is, now don't get me wrong, there is to a lesser or greater degree, depending on the individual, a sense of power and empowerment by, in their minds, believing they're learning more about human behavior, and then they can have an authority mindset via that understanding. And a lot of that comes from the insecurity created by growing up in the types of environments that created their mental illnesses in the first place. A lot of these people feel out of control. They don't feel like they have a real grasp on their lives. And so they go into mental health fields, so that they can gain a greater sense of control via what they think is a deeper and more profound understanding of human behavior and what motivates people. However, the flawed part of their view of the world is that the truth of the matter is they would be better off simply sitting down, exploring self, and making a concentrated effort to gain a higher level of self-awareness. That would give them more control and more power over the direction of their lives than just studying a pseudoscience like psychology, which today is nothing more than a tool to create normal and abnormal mindsets in people. I mean, it's a form of control. That's all psychology is. It's in line with phrenology, which was the studying of the bumps on people's heads to determine their personality type back in the 19th and early 20th century. It's really on par with that. It's a pseudoscience. It's not a real science. And it's merely used to control people nowadays and what they view as normal and abnormal.
One of the things I've been noticing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think I'm 41 years old. I remember, you know, high school back in the 1990s. I am thinking, because I'm seeing it, and again, you can correct me if I'm 100% wrong, is that more and more women are becoming mentally and, quite frankly, spiritually unwell, yet they claim that they are the bee's knees, that they're all that. I remember this one girl at the Beta Male Cafe a couple of days ago. She works there, you know, cute little girl, and she's definitely unstable, and she was talking to a Beta Male soy boy, telling him, I don't chase after people. People have to come after me because I'm so awesome. But she is just one walking piece of, I don't want to say trash, but she is just one train wreck, yet she thinks that people should see how amazing she is. And I'm seeing more and more women acting like that. I don't know if that's female nature coming out into the open, or women actually have become more and more unwell in the past 20 years.
This is not normal. This is an aspect of the narcissism and the entitlement that is pushed on not just women, but everyone. But it's especially pushed on women because we live in this gynocentric society that puts them on a pedestal and tells them that they're great and they're wonderful. So this is an aspect of the narcissism that we're dealing with now. This is the trophies for everybody. You're great. You're wonderful. Parents are your friend, not your actual parent or a disciplinarian. This is having to do with a lack of a parental figure, a lack of a father figure, more accurately, a lack of somebody putting reasonable boundaries on a person's actions and self-image, how they view themselves, a reality check, as it were, which is what fathers are there to a large extent to give their kids, a reality check. They create the boundaries in that kid's life. They keep them grounded in reality. And we're living in a country now where only 18% of kids are growing up with a two-parent household where there's a father and a mother, 18%. In 1950, it was 80%. Woo! So, yes. These are numbers people don't know. There's a reason you don't know them, because the mainstream media doesn't tell you, because they don't want you to know. That's right. And so we have this degeneration of the family, and we have this overemphasizing of emotions. What I call is a society of sophistry. So I don't know if you know what a sophist is, but...
No, please tell us. Never heard of it.
The term sophist comes from the earliest days of Western philosophy. When Socrates created Western thought, there were the politicians and the so-called great thinkers that he called sophists. You had philosophers and sophists. The philosopher dealt with logic and reason and facts and empiricism and was rational, and the sophist, his arguments were all based on emotion. Well, that's the world we're living in now. Nothing is bound by logic or reason or rationality. It's all about feelings. And this type of feeling society, this type of feeling culture that we live in, feeds into the narcissism of a woman. It feeds into the narcissism, the entitlement that has been created by this gynocentric society. This woman you talked about that thinks she's the bee's knees, is it really any wonder that she thinks that when she's probably, what, in her early to mid-20s? She's probably on all the dating apps. She's probably got every fucking guy lining up on these dating apps telling her how great, how wonderful. She's probably got a fucking Instagram channel with thousands of followers. She's probably on Twitter and Facebook with tons of selfies and scant clothing or tight clothing, people telling her how wonderful she is. Well, there's no counter. There's no counter to this. Where's the father? Where's the person in her life telling her that's not true? That's not how the real world works. Where is the rational, the reasonable to counter the sophistic emotional side? Well, it's not there.
But here's the sad thing. She actually does have a father. She comes from a really good family. I mean, her father bought her like a brand new Audi.
Well, there you go.
Do you think the father is a...
He's a beta male. And so there's two circumstances that arise when there is a father in the house, but you still end up with a woman like this. Mm-hmm. So either there's no father or the father is a blue-pilled beta male.
Yeah. Now, this one thing about this girl, and I see a lot of women doing it on TikTok and what have you. This girl, you know, she's 18, 19. She's off to college. I think she's about 19, 20 now. And she is, like you mentioned, she's scantily dressed. I mean, she wears short skirts, so damn short. She has her boobs pretty much sticking out, yet she always complains about creepy old guys hitting on her. Please tell me, honey, we can see your hoo-ha. We see your big jiggly breast to the point where the owner of the cafe told you to cover up your freaking self, yet you're going to complain about old creepy men hitting on you? It's like, explain this to me.
Well, these are the guys she doesn't like. So, I mean, they're old and creepy because these are not the guys she's trying to attract. So if you're good looking, if you're a Chad, six pack, 6 inches down there, six figures, driving a nice car, then that's not creepy. But if you're the person she doesn't want to attract, it's creepy. And I'll be honest, I've been the same way. When I was 20 years younger, I was I was a very good looking guy when I was younger. And I didn't like fat, ugly broads coming on to me. And I had it happen occasionally. It's like, what? You think you've got a chance? You're out of your mind, pig. Yeah. So, I mean, okay, I've been there myself, but not to the extent that women are today. And the reason for that is because women, you see, they are equating sex. They are equating men getting access to sex, men having access and availing themselves of that access with some kind of serious commitment. See, women use sex to snag a dude. Okay? When they give up the poon, that's because that's a guy they want. That's a guy they want to snag. That's a guy that they want to be in a relationship with in many cases. Now, sometimes it's just to, you know, bang the dude and clang. But you always hear the complaining when he ghosts them or when he disappears or rejects them. So women don't generally sleep around just to hop from bed to bed to bed. The reason that happens is because they're always going for the top 5, 10% of dudes who have the pick of the fucking litter. So why would he settle for you? Well, he wouldn't. But in their mind, that poon, it's a hook to snag the dude and get him. And when it doesn't work, they get damaged, they get angry, and that's where they accumulate all this fucking baggage like Marley in a fucking Christmas Carol, dragging them fucking chains behind himself for fucking eternity. Well, that's the modern woman when she hits 30, okay? Which is why she's so angry and bitter.
That is very true. In fact, a friend of mine, I was talking to him yesterday here at Starbucks, and he told me, because he's he's 57, 58, but man, he looks a lot younger than 57, and he does like Aikido, you know, his blue eye, blonde, you know, he's like 5'7", he's like 5'8", but he looks really good for his age, makes a lot of money, and he's telling me, man, these girls, after I fuck them, they call me up the next day as if I was their husband for 20 years, like, hey, honey, you want to come over and help me move, you know, furniture and dumb shit like that? It's like, bitch, I was on top of you 12 hours ago, 13 hours ago, I didn't know who the fuck you were, and now you want me to help you move your furniture around? It's like, they think if I give up the pussy, you automatically become my husband.
Yeah, and it's interesting when they argue about not being objectified. They don't want to be objectified, don't treat me like an object, and yet they are using sex as a form of transaction, which turns them into nothing more than an object.
Do you think let me ask you this question on TRP. Do you think women are aware? Now, for all the audience members listening to this or will be listening to this in the replay, this is probably one of the most important things we need to have addressed. Do you think women are aware of their actions versus what they want from us? For example, today somebody uploaded a video on MGTOW TV of some girl doing a TikTok video showing, you know, she was a, you know, hot blonde showing us her breast, and then she turns around, starts twerking her fair ass. Is that girl aware that she can never ever have a good man, that she can never ever say, I want a man to love me for who I am? are they aware that their actions are the total and complete opposite of what they would be looking for?
No, the majority of women are not self-aware. Something you need to understand about self-awareness is it's one of the key ingredients for change. So to become a better person, to improve yourself, to become essentially a what I would call a decent individual with virtues, which is the only kind of currency that matters in a relationship, you have to be self-aware. Mm-hmm. These women, they don't have virtues. They, these are the kind of women that if you ask them, what do you bring to the table, they say, I'm the table. Even though the table is the relationship, which is made by two people, and yet they're so narcissistic, they say, I'm the table. So the entire relationship is focused around them. And you would think, oh, well, gee, they're so self-centered. Oh, geez, wouldn't that contribute to their self-awareness? No, no, it detracts from it. It detracts from it because we live in a society now where you're encouraged not to be self-aware, where you're encouraged to focus solely upon hedonistic pleasure and the pleasure of the moment, pleasures of the flesh, of food and sex and drugs. And that's why moral relativism is pushed so much to destigmatize all of these things. Well, you know, it's all relative. One man's sinner is another man's saint. No, no, no. They're saints and they're sinners. Okay. There are objective qualifiers for what is a saint and what is a sinner. I hate this moral relativism bullshit. And it's pushed specifically to excuse bad behavior. And these women are the epitome of virtueless people. And so they're lacking in self-awareness. So no, they're not aware at all.
Now, you said earlier on that women are, this is not normal for the way women are today. Do you think that social media has actually rewired a woman's brain to be what she is today? Because like you mentioned earlier, this is unnatural. And do you think that social media actually rewired a woman's brain?
I don't know about rewiring. I mean, it depends on the developmental phase of their life that they are interacting on social media. Certainly there is a certain amount of, rewiring, you could call it, going on in a younger generation growing up in social media. I mean, women my age, it's a little different. And they're the most unhappy, by the way. Women are the most unhappy now than they've ever been in human history. Big shocker why. But I think there is some... there are some negative consequences, certainly some rewiring going on insofar as where they're getting their pleasure from, where they're getting their validation, what they're getting their validation from. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not fulfilling. It's certainly not a good thing. They're certainly being fed a bad diet, if you want to call that rewiring, certainly. But there are naturalistic, biologically determined realities to human nature. And social media and growing up in a certain environment, it's only going to do so much to change the human mind, the human brain. Intrinsically, we are built for certain activities, pair bonding, having children, getting a sense of meaning from creating a legacy, something that's going to live on into future generations. So these are all fundamental truths of humanity that no amount of environmental factors will change. And I think this is why women, modern women especially, are so unhappy, no matter what their age might be, because they're not living in line with their natures. They are living, they are trying, they are believing, they are following a socially constructed path, one of a radically individualistic nature, which teaches that you can choose your nature, choose what is actually biologically determined, and everything is up to individual choice, and there is no objective foundational reality to any of the truths in regards to things that make you happy or bring fulfillment or meaning to life. That's what they learn, that's what they're taught, that's what they live, and that's why they're so unhappy.
Because it is unnatural. Now, another thing that's unnatural, and somebody brought this up in the chat right now, Kobe One, he is asking your thoughts on NoFap and porn. Do you think porn may had a good hand, pardon the pun, in having guys become so beta and simpish and, quite frankly, soy boys?
I don't necessarily think so. The bigger problem is the demasculation through the attack on testosterone in our culture. Let me explain things a little further. So we are being chemically castrated on a daily basis by various products that are infused with a chemical called bisphenol A. Many people out there in the audience don't know about this chemical, but it's in everything, even in your tuna can. That you would think, well, why would that have a product that is supposedly added to plastic to enhance its hardness? Why would it be on paper and paper receipts? And why would, when you wash your hands and you've handled a cash receipt for something you bought from the supermarket, that soap causes the bisphenol A to be absorbed into your skin and then your bloodstream? Why is it on everything in everything? And why is it something that when you imbibe it and it gets absorbed into your skin and your bloodstream, destroys testosterone? Well, it's there purposefully. Men are under attack, and our testosterone is under attack. And actually, there is some truth to NOFAP in that if you go a week without masturbating, you will experience a 49% increase in your testosterone.
Okay, good.
49% increase if you go a week. However, that would not be an issue if we didn't have all of these products in our daily life, from the plastic that our steak comes in, wrapped in, which thereby causes the bisphenol A to get into the meat, to the cash receipts when we buy something, to the tuna we eat that has a layer of plastic on the inside of the can in the form of a resin. It's everywhere. If we didn't have that issue of everything we eat and everything we handle being infused with bisphenol A, fapping wouldn't really be an issue to begin with. But as it is, because our testosterone is under attack chemically, fapping actually does reduce testosterone in addition to the bisphenol A to such an extent that it is an issue. Which is why not fapping can increase your testosterone, but only to such an extent where it's more at normal levels, where it would already be if we didn't have all of these chemical agents in our atmosphere and in our environment destroying our testosterone.
Now, something that you may not be aware of when it comes to me, I'm on TRT, which stands for testosterone replacement therapy. Now, my testosterone is 304. It's supposed to be between 300 to 1100. Now, I got checked out about 2 years ago, so I was at 39 at the time. My testosterone was 304, with 300 being the lowest. My estrogen was super high, and my testosterone was lower than my father, who is double my age. So what you are saying, that there is an attack on testosterone, it is 100% right. And I can tell you, as somebody who had low T, elevated estrogen, it's not good for the body.
No.
It's not good at all.
Well, you see, estrogen is the emotional hormone. And testosterone, in simplest terms, and you could call this an oversimplification, but it is the rational hormone. So when you take a population, and bisphenol A is actually an estrogen mimicking drug that also destroys testosterone. When you introduce this estrogen mimicking drug that destroys testosterone, you make men more emotional, less reasonable, less rational, less able to think critically. And at the same time, you also destroy women's ability to do that. People don't realize this, but women also have testosterone. Not a lot, but they do have some. And when you introduce this much estrogen and this kind of testosterone destroying drug into everything, well, what happens to women? They go from maybe possibly having the ability to be rational to having no ability whatsoever to be rational at any time during their lives.
So having a woman leader is probably not the best thing to have.
No, women leaders, it's a joke. Come on.
No.
Okay. Come on, let's be honest here. That's all virtue signaling nonsense. People supporting women leaders. That's feminist mumbo jumbo. Come on. Women are, I'll be honest, there are some women out there that maybe might make good leaders. There's always an exception to every rule. A broken clock is always right twice a day. But on average, no, women don't make good leaders. They're not predisposed to leadership. They're not built for leadership.
No, they're not. And, you know, Sandman, of course, we all know Sandman. I know Sandman. Every now and then he talks about living in an egalitarian society where men and women really are equal. Now, to his credit, he says most women cannot live truly to the equal part unless, you know, Big Daddy government is behind them. But I don't, you probably don't believe in the whole egalitarian thing. It will never happen.
No, because it's not in conformity with reality. First of all, I've talked a lot about this. First of all equal means it's a synonym for same. That's all it is. So if you talk about men and women being equal, you have to be very specific about what you mean. Are we talking about equality under the law? Are we talking about equality under God or something like that, meaning in ability? Are we talking about equality in terms of attributes? What are we talking about here? Because we have different junk, so already we're not equal there. We're not the same there. Well, men are stronger than women, even though women like to deny that as if there's not ample evidence of the biological diversity between men and women, and that men are far stronger than women. They like to ignore that, though. I remember a video I saw of one broad being told on a college campus that she was not as strong as a man, and she started crying because she didn't seem to know that fact. But men and women can't be equal. It's no matter what you do, they can't be equal. The only way you can create equality of any sort is to empower the government to essentially take something away from men in the areas that you want men and women to be equal in. Because, first of all, men on average are smarter than women by about 5 IQ points. That bell curve study was a bunch of bullshit. It studied boys and girls under the age of 13, and girls mature faster
through
boys. So when men and women were studied over the age of 25, they found that men were on average smarter by about 5 IQ points. So the bell curve study is bullshit. Men are on average, not just at the high end, smarter than women. And we're much stronger than them as well. So how exactly are we going to be equal? I mean, are we going to take the 90-95% of patents that are filed by men, and the other 5% that are filed by women are for mostly fucking cosmetics? Are we going to take and how are we going to make that equal? How many bricklayers are we going to take and turn the 99% of bricklayers into, are we going to get rid of 45% of the men and replace them with women? How about the fucking prisons? Are we going to get rid of most of the men in prison, and or are we going to fill the prisons up with women so that there's an equal number of them in the prisons? Are we going to make it so that women die as much on the job as men? Are we going to make it so that, 98-99% of casualties in war are not men and instead it's 50-50? I mean, how are we going to enforce this fucking equality that women seem to think is a possible fucking ability? Well, we can't. It's impossible.
It is impossible. And something that I saw in Silicon Valley, and I really hate this, is that I see women manipulate men who do all the hands-on work. So a woman might have a good idea. For example, the woman who started Bumble, she worked pretty much for Tinder, stole the idea from Tinder, got a bunch of soy boys to build a Tinder app, and now everybody is hailing her as, you know, Steve Jobs and an entrepreneur and a trailblazer. But the reality of the matter is she stole the idea from some other guy. She got a bunch of beta males to do all the hands-on work, and then at the end, all glory be to her. Well, that pisses me off.
Yeah, that's what, look at any woman in the world right now that is uber rich. They got that rich by divorce, or if the money came from a man. We all know this. Most people are afraid to say it, but the truth of the matter is men are the ones that produce. Women are the ones that largely consume. You know this, I know this.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about in the manosphere. Whether it's the manosphere, like here on MGTOW TV, on the greater YouTube, you know, even looking people outside of the manosphere, people like, what's that guy, Louder with Crowder, is there anybody out there that you can look at and say, hey, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. You should, you know, you maybe should listen to that guy sometimes.
One guy that comes to mind almost immediately is Carl Benjamin from the Lotus Eaters. Smart guy, very red-pilled. He's got some of the best takes. He runs his own podcast daily. He's got a lot of followers. He goes by, now you might know him by the name Sargon of Akkad. Maybe not.
Ooh, Thinking Ape didn't, Thinking Ape had some words to say about him. Isn't he the guy who recently said that you as a man don't have your purpose if you don't have children or something like that?
So let me first address things like that. Yeah. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
A person might have some views that I don't like.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I'm going to dismiss them out of hand. So Carl Benjamin has a family, and he has a wife, and he has kids. Okay. Well, I, as a discerning individual, as a philosopher, have the ability to take what he says that I disagree with and put that aside and listen to the vast majority of things he has to say that I do agree with without essentially dismissing it all out of hand.
Uh-huh.
It's very important if you want to be as red-pilled as possible. If you want to embrace philosophy and be a philosopher, that you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Many people become too ideologically polarized. They tend to too closely personally identify with their ideology, with their view of the world, so much so that if they hear something that clashes with their view of the world, with their ideology, they will just dismiss you out of hand and listen to nothing you have to say. Well, what group of people do we know that's like that? Well, feminists and leftists in general. So you don't want to dismiss someone just because they have one view that you don't agree with. That's a bad idea. That doesn't mean believe everything they say. I take what they say at face value and I look, do I agree? Do I disagree? Does this person say more that I agree with than they say that I disagree with? And even then, is there something that they're saying that I can get value out of? Now, with most leftists, that's no. But Sargon of Akkad, the majority of what he says, the vast majority, is right on the money. Does he have one or two views that I don't agree with? Sure. But who doesn't?
Of course. Yeah, and one of the things that other people also brought up is that, what's his name? We spoke about him before the chat. Stephen Molyneux.
Stephon.
You said, you know what? Yeah, Stephon. And, you know, I admit I didn't watch many of his videos, but the ones I did, he seemed... I'm not going to lie to you. I honestly like his accent and demeanor. Again, I haven't watched all his videos to say, you know, to give you a full take on him like Jordan Peterson. You know, Jordan Peterson, I feel is more of a snake. I can tell you that, or some sort of, you know... confidence behind it. But when it comes to Stephen Molyneux, you know, again, I just like his accent and demeanor. I could possibly be totally wrong about the guy. I don't know, you tell me.
Well, his accent is from growing up in England until he was 11. So
okay.
And as far as he's a genuine philosopher, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. He's a good philosopher. He has many good takes, but I do disagree with some of his takes. For example, his view on family and his views on men. He believes that men are responsible for the general unhappiness of women. He believes that a man should never lead a woman on, especially in her most fertile years. He tells men to not engage with women in a casual manner because it's misleading to them, and you end up wasting their most fertile years, which in and of itself denies women's accountability. It denies their agency. And he tends to do that quite a bit. And that's a very blue-pilled way of seeing things, so I don't like that. I also don't like some of his views on family. I think he places an overemphasis on that. I also don't like some of his views in regards to obligation. He used to be somebody who was a very big fan and follower of Ayn Rand. If you haven't heard of her or studied her, I suggest you check her out. This is how you know I'm not sexist, because one of my favorite philosophers is a woman.
Ayn Rand?
Yes, A-Y-N is her first name. Ayn.
Oh, no, Yeah. I not only do I know her, but I was listening to a TFM live stream a couple of days ago, and he said that I can't pronounce her name. Ayn Rand is a dollar, you know, a dollar store version of Nietzsche.
He's more of a social commentary individual, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's a very odd ad hominem, non-analytical, totally surface and saying nothing while thinks they're saying something kind of comment to make. It doesn't really mean mm-hmm. anything. Dime store version of Nietzsche. Could you be more specific? No, if he could, he would have. There's a lot of people who are self-styled philosophers, but they prove themselves false when they make stupid comments like that. But no, Ayn Rand is an objectivist, and she's the founder of the Objectivist School of Philosophy. A lot of people, especially ones with more left-leaning views politically, tend to scoff at her. Whatever their views about the interactions between the sexes might be, a good example would be somebody like Tom Lykus, which you might have heard of. Tom Lykus has the right views on feminism, but he's to the left when it comes to everything else. Loves Hillary Clinton, hates Donald Trump, right. and is a leftist. So there's a lot of people out there that if you question them about anything outside of their views about the relations between men and women, you'll find that they're very liberal-minded. So Ayn Rand is a great philosopher.
You know what? Let's talk about philosophers from the past maybe 200-300 years that are still relevant to this very day. And let us know, who do you think is, obviously Ayn Rand is one of the top ones. Who do you think is a fraud? Who do you think is like worthless? I mean, well, Sigmund Freud comes to mind. Everybody talks about him. So let's talk about some of these philosopher people that from the past 200 years that might be phonies or might actually be really good.
So there's not really too many I would recommend. Ayn Rand, and it would be it. I can tell you that some of the ones that are the worst, people like Kant and Hegel, Hegelian,
okay,
and Kant, they're horrible, especially Kant, but Hegel as well. Kant is, to a large extent, responsible for people's adherence to postmodernism. Hegel is very much an idealist. I hate both of them. Both are to a large degree responsible for the degeneration of the Western world. Hegel, I especially can't stand because he's an idealist and a moral relativist. If you don't, so idealism is a school of philosophy which teaches that the mind is paramount and reality shapes and conforms itself to the mind, which is utter nonsense. But people believe this nonsense about perception being an output tool and not simply an input tool. That tells you how dumb people are to a large extent. So I hate Hegel. He's an idealist. He's relativistic. Idealism is essentially this belief that whatever you can imagine in its most perfect ideal form can be created in reality. Reality conforms itself to the will. You just have to apply the will in the proper way and with, I guess, thought pressure, I suppose. Reality somehow magically morphs into what you are idealizing. So it's essentially a form of a solipsism, this belief that essentially the world is nothing more than a construct, a creation of our shared consciousness. So Hegel is a big proponent of these things, and Kant you can thank to a large extent for postmodernism. Combine the two and you get the hell we're living in now. I don't like either, but both are taught to a large extent in university. So those are two of the worst, and Ayn Rand is actually one of the best. The truth of the matter is there aren't very many good philosophers in the past few 100 years, unfortunately.
Now, something somebody brought up in the chat that I did not know is that Friedrich Nietzsche committed suicide.
Nietzsche, yeah, gotta love him. Yeah.
how can somebody who's a philosopher end up committing suicide? I mean, you'd be the last person on earth, I guess.
He was a fatalist, yeah. Nietzsche, yeah, I don't like Nietzsche.
A fatalist is what? Is that like the Black Pillars?
To a certain extent, sees the worst possible outcomes as the eventuality of almost any situation. Yeah, pretty much. I'm not a big fan of Nietzsche. The truth of the matter is, there's too many of these people who are lauded and praised in philosophy as if they've created some kind of school of thought that is so awesome and profound. It just really creates all these schisms that sends people off in all these different directions and creates too much diversification. The truth of the matter is, philosophy, it was never meant for this. You got to go all the, you go all the way back to Socrates. Socrates himself said that the sole goal of philosophy is to be used for the practical application. It's supposed to be applied practically to improve the well-being of people's lives. That was almost verbatim what he said. This is the guy that created Western philosophy, and now we got all this bullshit, schisms and diversifications into all these different areas that really just take away and detract from philosophy's main purpose. So I tend to only focus on the people who apply philosophy for what it was intended for: solve problems, improve people's lives. That's why I'm a practical realist.
This is a good thing that you brought up right now about solving issues in the real world, because right now in the manosphere, we have red pill, we have black pill, and there's a gray pill out there. There's a gold pill. Each one is thinking to themselves that they are right. Now, the red pill, as we all know, is awareness to women. Black pill is, you know, a lot of people say it's nihilism. It's like Nagasaki Hiroshima truth, black pill truth, which is, hey man, if you're 5'3", you're bald, you got an ugly face, it's over for you. The gold pill is that, you know, if you know the right things to say, you can look smacks, you can be golden and get that amazing girl. How would you apply philosophy to any of these pills that, or any of the thoughts going on in the manosphere right now?
Well, I'm very much a an adherent of Socrates in that sense. You have to question everything, and you have to question the questions until you get to the truth. And when you do this, the Socratic method, the truth will become evident. It's like essentially sifting through dirt until you eventually, as you get finer and finer with the sifters you're using, eventually get to the gold dust. That's how I like to refer to the Socratic method. So you have to ask questions. You have to ask the right questions. You can't be afraid to ask questions that might reveal a truth to you that may clash with or disprove whatever you might currently believe. And that's really key. A lot of people don't want to face or confront the possibility of disproving their worldview. So you have to be fearless as a philosopher. You can't be afraid to discover truths that might disprove long-held sacred cows, as it were, that you might hold.
Now, a lot of these young people out there who are coming into the manosphere, a lot of them are young, they're in their 20s, they probably never had a father. I mean, society probably beat them up for being male, as you mentioned. I doubt that they have any sort of philosophy background or even real world knowledge or any sort of wisdom. I mean, what would you tell typical 20-some-year-old, you know, it's over, bro. What would you tell somebody like that? I don't know what to tell them. I don't even know how to begin.
Well, first of all, like I said earlier in the show, people start off with a foundation of knowing and understanding other people in the world through knowing self and one's interaction with said world. So you really need to begin with yourself. First step is understand you. Second step is look at how you interact with the world and the lessons that teaches you. And once you understand yourself and how you interact with the world better, then you can apply that to other people and their experiences with the world. And in that way, you can grow your knowledge and understanding and apply that. And that's where one gains wisdom. Wisdom is, so knowledge is the knowing, wisdom is the doing. So in that sense, one can grow by starting with self and self-understanding and broaden that to other people. It's actually not easy to do.
It's not easy. That's the key word you just said. It's not easy to do, and this is one of the things I want to leave the show off with, because my laptop battery is going bad. I'm down to like 7%. One of the guys in the chat brought up a guy by the name of Hamza Ahmed. Have you heard of Hamza Ahmed on YouTube?
No, I haven't. Sorry.
Well, I saw some of his videos. He's a Pakistani dude living in UK, you know, shredded. He's no Chad Preet by any means, but he has a good body, you know, a sexy accent, you know, kind of has some game going for him. And here's what I am seeing. People are looking for what I refer to as a magic wand. They're looking for that silver bullet. Like the person in the chat brought up, Hamza Ahmed is one of the fastest growing red pillars out there. These young guys, they're going from AMS to Fresh and Fit, now to Hamza Ahmed. They're just looking for that one guy out there who's going to turn their life around, that they're going to go from incel to stud.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's not. This is the thing. This is what I call the personal trainer syndrome. People go, they get a personal trainer, they see this guy, he's fit, he's in shape, he looks great. They think, oh, geez, I can look just like him. The only problem is that, no, you can't, because he's very specific and unique as an individual. His body chemistry, his body makeup, his heart, his musculature, his genetics, everything he did to look like that is totally different than what you need to do, and you may never look like that because you might not have the genetics, and even if you do, what he did is going to be different from what you do. And that's the key you have to understand. When you look at others, when you learn from others, you are getting their input, their way, their view, their wisdom. But the only reason you do that is so that you can integrate it into self, and so that you can eventually reach a point where you find your own answers within, not from without. So you're not going to get the answers from them. You're only going to get the answers from yourself. They are there to act as guides, to help you develop the tools, the knowledge, the understanding, and then eventually the wisdom to then find your own answers, so that you then have enough understanding of self and how you interact with the world and what you bring to the world to be able to get yourself to where you want to be in that world. So the answers come from you. People looking for answers from other people, that's the wrong way to go about it, okay? You take what they can offer in terms of knowledge and wisdom, but eventually you're going to find your own way, your own path, and you've got to find your own answers. Looking for answers in other people, that's not the way you're supposed to go about learning. Learning is you're supposed to learn to find your own answers, not get them from others.
Very well said. For all of you guys in, who are going to listen to this and will listen to this, like TRP just said, look for the answers within yourself. It's totally cool to come watch a couple of videos, get to understand that, hey, I'm not the crazy person out there, that all women are mental. You know, that's true, that most women out there are mental. But don't look for that one particular person who's going to be your messiah, who's going to give you salvation. Like TRP said, guys, look to the answers. The answers can only come from you. And I am telling you guys right now, when you really focus on yourself, you are working on yourself. You don't have time to watch AMS, Fresh and Fit. You don't have time to watch Hamza Ahmed. You know, I come here on MGTOW TV. Believe it or not, I watch all the videos on MGTOW TV. You guys might say, yo, Amr, isn't that a bit hypocritical of you? You just told us, you know, to look for answers from ourselves. Don't go looking for answers from somebody else. No, and I'm going to tell you why. Thanks to creators like TRP over here, they give you knowledge. I mean, this is like education, okay? Let's say you want to learn how to invest in something. You're not going to go out there and try to invest on your own. You're going to get taken advantage of. You want education from people who did it, like Warren Buffett, okay? So somebody like TRP, they are giving you guys the knowledge, the tool. They're giving you the tools. That's it. They're giving you the tools, you know? You take MGTOW. What's MGTOW TV? MGTOW TV is simply a tool for creators like TRP to use. That's it. That's all I am. I'm a tool that you guys can use. Same thing with our content creators on MGTOW TV. They are a tool to have in your chess box or toolbox to better get on with your life. Stop going to these guys like AMS, Fresh and Fit, Hamza, Ahmed, and thinking that they're going to be, that they're going to save your life by going like this. And guys, TRP, I want to get your opinion on this. I don't want to give out my opinion on this. What do you think of these guys out there like AMS and Hamza Ahmed who charge $1,000 an hour for a phone call?
Oh, I think it's crazy. I think this is part of the guru, life coach kind of bullshit where people are putting way too much faith and trust in another person to give them the solutions to their own life problems. Mm-hmm. It's a big mistake. You see, the person who is really going to help you is somebody who is going to help you to find your own answers. The person that you really don't want to put your faith or trust in is somebody who you're having to pay $1,000 an hour to tell you what to do. You want the person who's going to teach you how to figure that out for yourself. Which is what I feel my job as a philosopher is. Give you the tools to figure out for yourself what is true.
Do you think, I don't know if this sounds conspiracy theory. I mean, you've been booted off of YouTube. I've been booted off of YouTube. In fact, my channel on YouTube, I'm getting more views on freaking MGTOW TV than YouTube. Do you think there is a concerted effort by the powers that be to promote people like AMS, Fresh and Fit, while pretty much getting rid of people like you, me, and Sandman?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. You have to have a certain amount of the opposition voice on your platform so you can say, hey, look, we're not, listen to these guys. Listen to what these guys are saying. Hey, we're not banning all these people. We banned certain people because they were outside of our guidelines about hate speech or some other bullshit that isn't a real thing. Absolutely. Certain people they push so they can maintain some kind of air of fairness in regards to the First Amendment. And they do so because these people are largely benign. They're largely talking about something in a way and saying things and discussing it in a way that isn't any kind of threat to the status quo. They might not like it, but it's not so outside the bounds like the stuff we discuss in regards to actually solving the problem that the powers that be say, oh, wait, that's too much. They're actually, they're talking about the stuff that we really don't want people to know about. They're given, red pills of such a high dose that they would choke a fucking horse. No. We can't have that. So, yes, there is a concentrated effort to do that. These people, many of them are not so much controlled opposition as they are allowed on the platform because they don't stray too far outside the lines of what is allowed. And it allows YouTube and other platforms like that to maintain an air of credibility by saying, hey, look, we have the other side talking. Mm-hmm. We've got both sides represented. We're not biased in any way. Look, listen to these guys and what they're saying. I mean, hey, if we were biased, they wouldn't even be here.
That's very true, very true. One of the last things I want to finish up with, what's your take on these so-called godfathers of the manosphere and the red pill? You got, white Rollo Tomasi. You got black Kevin Samuels. They're being called the godfather. I mean, they have good material. I mean, Rollo Tomasi wrote a freaking book, and Kevin Samuels, he took off like a Boeing 747. I'm not taking away from their accomplishments, but what is this thing of worshiping, gods? Something that people should be looking into, or is it something where it's like this is more of marketing than anything else?
Well, I mean, for me, and I think this takes a long time to develop this ability. I can filter out the garbage and I can separate the wheat from the chaff. I don't know that everybody's able to do that. As far as the worship aspect goes, I think a lot of it has to do with people lacking a strong sense of self. Mm-hmm. I think it comes from a lot of men growing up with no father or no real father figure. I think that has a lot to do with it. So these men, they see these guys like Kevin Samuels giving them these truths, giving them these red pills. And so, they never had a mentor in their lives. They never had a male father figure mentor type there. So when they're suddenly presented with it, they can't help but latch onto that person and kind of have a hero worship for them because they've never had these strong male figures in their life. And we all know how men are treated in today's society. Where's the male empowerment? Where's the pedestalizing of men and male virtues and male traits? Hell, if anything, men are treated like gum on the bottom of your shoe. The exact opposite is done. Men are degraded and put down and just reduced in the eyes of everyone. And that the effort is to essentially to view men in the most negative light as possible. So you've got these guys that come along who are so masculine and proud of it, and talking about how great and wonderful men are, and giving them truths that their father should have given them, but they had no father, or the father they had was a pussy. Well, it's no wonder to me that you get this level, to a certain extent, this very high level of hero worship, in a sense. I'd be surprised if it didn't exist in the current situation we have now.
Which leads me to ask this question. Now, I'm very fortunate to grow up with, both parents are married, strong, great, amazing father. In fact, he's still alive, and I cannot in any way, I'm not gonna lie, I cannot empathize with people who grew up with no father, like growing up in a single mother household. Do you believe in such a thing as a lost cause?
Well,
That's
obviously such thing. Yes, obviously. I mean, insofar as we're talking about, reality, of course, there are such things as people who are lost causes. I'm not an idealist. I don't believe that everybody who is extremely damaged can be saved or helped. Whether or not someone can depends to a large extent on how much they've been beaten down in their lives and how much agency they can and will decide to take on. So yes, there are such things as lost causes in the world, obviously.
Now, something else that relates to me, I don't know if it's just something wrong on my part. Now, one of the things, I love working on MGTOW TV. I love the fact that there are people out here making money off of MGTOW TV. Now, granted, MGTOW TV is losing money. I did my taxes for last year. We made like $40,000, but we actually lost money because we're paying out creators. We're paying for servers and what have you. But I love the fact that I wake up every morning. I spend 8, 9, 10 hours working on MGTOW TV. I love the fact that, we were actually the platform, and TFM already said that. It brought a tear to my eye. We pretty much saved TFM at one point, because we were one of the first alt-tech websites to offer live streaming. So with me, I am very, very happy with the fact that I am providing great value to other people. Now, when you go work for Google, you're the guy who's working on Google Maps. Nobody gives a flying F who you are. I mean, if they know you, what are you gonna say? I'm the guy who's responsible for that smiley icon on the map. You don't mean anything in the grand scheme. You're just a cog in the machine. Do you think that if somebody truly has a purpose where they benefit other people, where it can come back and they say, hey, this person, this company, this website that this person built, this saved my life? Because I'm sure you get this all the time, TRP, people saying, you saved my life. In fact, Terrence Pop, he counts the number of people he has saved. He's up to 417, 418 by now. And he's like, that's the happiest thing in my life is that we save lives, we benefit lives. If you don't have that, like a lot of young people nowadays who are beaten down, do you think that helped, that sadly and unfortunately, makes them the way they are today?
Well, I do think, first of all, from my own point of view,
Yeah.
if you're going to be a bachelor or single man today, it's very important to find some way to bring meaning to your life. And there are other ways to do that besides having children, especially in this modern society where we have such a diversification of labor. So many things we can do to create some kind of legacy. So I think that it's very important to have some kind of outlet as a man that will bring meaning to your life. I think I made a specifically a video talking about this on my BitChute channel, maybe even on MGTOW TV. I might want to go check that
Of course.
out. But as far as young people go, I'm not sure what the question was.
Well, the
Why?
question is, well, here's the thing, let's reverse the question and say, if these people were to find meaning in their life, like let's say somebody makes a video on social media, and only five people ever watch it, but one person says, "Yo, man, you changed my life. Will that you saved my life? Will that help make a person who is so down, beaten down, somebody who's on the verge of suicide, somebody who's depressed, will that elevate that person to actually be content with life if they saved one person and only five people ever watched his video, but one person, they saved their life?"
Well, certainly that's going to give you motivation to do more of whatever it was that saved that person's life. You're going to have to go on doing that, though. Meaning is in the moment. The past and the present don't actually exist. Time is very real, but it advances forward, and all we have is the present time. So once you've accomplished something, achieved it, and created some kind of legacy, that's good, but it has to be undertaken on a continual basis until you die. So, if you want to have meaning in your life, it's got to be something that is, almost a daily occurrence and have some kind of goal or some kind of destination in mind. Even if you don't achieve it, it's just the actual journey of trying to reach it that is the actual achievement, the thing that brings the actual meaning to one's life. So yes, such activity brings meaning, but you can't just rest on your laurels, as it were.
Have you ever been out to New York City, for example?
A long, long time ago.
Long, long time ago. Okay.
Yeah.
New York City reminds me a little bit of Egypt. Now, in Egypt, there are stores out there that are run by like a small family, like one or two people. I mean, only like one or two people can fit in in the restaurant. It's literally a hole in the wall. They make food. They make food for poor people. I mean, of course, they sell the food, but they're not making all that much money. But they are super happy because people love to eat their food. If somebody was to make food and sell it, and people would love their food, even if they make, even if they make a freaking lemon stand and they sell lemonade, and people pass by and they're like, "Man, I love your lemonade." Would that be something to me? I know you're probably thinking to yourself, "TRP, what the hell is this guy trying to
No,
get at?"
not at
Give me,
all.
I
Not at
want to
all.
give these people out there who have, look. I come from a good family. I have brothers, sisters, they're all married. I got seven nieces and nephews. So from my perspective, thank God, of course, I'm good. But these people out there who don't have brothers, sisters, they don't have a father, maybe their mother was a dirty, dirty whore. How do we give these people something to be proud of? That's what I want to, that's the whole point of this live stream I want to get at.
So, okay, let me make this as simple as possible.
Yes.
So, first of all this starts with self-knowledge. And if you know yourself, you're going to know what you're good at. And so, take that thing that you're good at, that you've discovered through self-exploration, take that knowledge of self, use that, and become the best at whatever it is you're good at you can possibly be. And then develop that to its umpteenth and apply it in your life. That's number one. That can bring you a high quality of life. Now, will that necessarily bring meaning? Not necessarily. Because, you see, meaning has to be something that will create a legacy. It has to be something that will continue some part of yourself, something that you do that extends into the future. Now, with me, that is creating content. That is philosophy. That is teaching people about how reality works, finding the truth, trying to model for people a way of thinking and doing that will be advantageous in their lives, trying to wake them up. That is going to extend into the future. They'll learn, then they'll teach their children or they'll teach their friends. These are lessons. These are things that have an impact on others and will continue to do so down through the centuries. Or you can have kids. That's another way that used to be the ready-made way for meaning. You get a family and kids, and your kids would be your legacy. But in today's world where getting married is to a large extent a loser decision for a man, you can find various other avenues to do something that will survive beyond you. I think that's the most important thing. You have to find something you can do, whether you are developing and implementing those things you're good at to make a living, and then you do something on the side that allows you to create a legacy, or your job itself is one that allows you to have a legacy, like being actually a good teacher, actually working as a teacher and teaching worthwhile things to your students that are going to outlive you. You've got to find something that's going to create a legacy, that's going to be able to leave an echo of you behind in the world that will outlive you. And that's one of the most important things to finding meaning in life.
Have you heard about the late Paul Proteus?
The what?
Paul Proteus.
No, I don't.
Paul Proteus was a black YouTuber. This guy was one of the best guys we had. I think he passed away a couple of years ago, but his videos, he left one hell of a legacy. I don't think he had kids. I think he lived in Japan for a while. I don't think he was married. No kids, but his videos live on. Mm. I honestly think with the way our society is, technology and everything, if you guys can make life-changing videos, I think that would suffice, you know, to say, hey, I left something behind. Because we still talk about Paul Proteus. We still talk about Renegade One. In fact, for Archangel, you know, the guy who's uploading videos on behalf of Michael Beck, he just said, I give some nice things to Goodwill periodically. I know that nobody cares, but hey, that's something that's gonna live on. Maybe somebody, you know, I actually bought clothing from Goodwill when I was out in Hollywood because I couldn't afford, you know, to buy a fancy schmancy suit. So maybe, hey, maybe giving, you know, to Goodwill is just something that you can help out in the universe that's gonna make you feel, you know, like you did something for the greater good. Yeah, I know.
It's not a conversation when I get into that's altruism and such. But yeah. I want to say one last thing about Ayn Rand, is that you mentioned someone else who I'm not going to name talking about how she was a dime store version of Nietzsche. It's really quite absurd. Ayn Rand's main objective was to try and get people to wake up to the virtues of selfishness and being mainly concerned about one's own well-being, and that is the natural state of humans. And if we will live for ourselves instead of embracing an altruistic mindset that leads us down a path of living for others, which is nothing more than enslaving yourself to the wants and needs of others, which is what socialism is, then you can live a largely happy and fulfilling life. A lot of people that talk about Ayn Rand, they don't know squat, and they make very dime store observations like that one that don't really have any depth because they don't really understand her teachings in any real way, nor do they understand that selfishness is actually virtuous and not an evil thing. The word selfish is bandied about as some kind of negative because the people that brand it as a negative, they largely benefit financially off of you believing that it's a horrible thing and that you should be selfless instead. Most of those teachings come from a large extent, the Catholic Church, the church in general, where they want you to give 10% of your money right off the top to the church. And now, of course, with the new religion that is leftism, they also teach that the highest virtue is to give away your graft, give away your hard work, give away your money, care more about the well-being of others than yourself, which in my mind is truly evil and abhorrent. And by the way, I make a delineation between altruism, which is what I was just talking about, and charity. Charity is a very different thing altogether. And I could explain how it's different if you want. But
go ahead. Yeah, explain. Let's end out with that. Yeah, tell us the difference between charity and altruism. I would love to know myself.
So altruism is self-sacrifice. It's sacrificing for the well-being of others. It's at the heart of all socialist systems. It's what eventually becomes communism, which is the centralized control of an economy. It teaches that we are brother's keeper, that the well-being of others should be just as, if not more important than our own, because we don't exist as individuals. We exist as a collective. And of course, you'll notice that this seems to, at least on the surface, clash with the idea of radical individualism, which is a tool by the left to actually bring about collectivism. So altruism is in and of itself a sacrifice to the needs of others, which turns you into nothing more than a slave, while charity is a calculated, discriminating, discerning giving to those who will benefit from your help, while altruism is generally 100% lacking in discernment. That is one of the major differences. And also, when you are charitable, you don't give so much that it affects your own well-being. And it's not your sole reason for existing. While altruism, people who are highly altruistic, their lives tend to focus around their activism and their altruism and their so-called giving natures. And all these people are really doing is turning themselves into sacrificial lambs and making them slaves to the needs of others, others who in and of themselves become dependent upon the altruism of those others. So it's a very much parasitic type of relationship. Well, charity, I can give you an example. Say I have a homeless man, and he's sitting there on the sidewalk, and he has a sign that says, please give me some money for food. Well, how long has this guy been homeless? Why is he homeless? What put him in this situation? What's he going to do with that money if I give it to him? Is he actually going to use that money to better his life, or is he going to go buy some a bottle of $2.99 Thunderbird wine and drink himself into fucking oblivion? That is one of the key differences between altruism and charity. There is discernment. There is discrimination involved. If I give this guy $5, it's going to do nothing to help the world. In fact, it's going to make the world worse. It's going to make this guy even more of a bum. It's going to make him into more of a lush. It's going to just continue the cycle of dependence that he has on the so-called compassion and empathy of others. Now, say we got another homeless guy that says, please give me money. I need to eat. He became homeless because he broke his leg. His job was completely 100% labor-based. He was in construction, couldn't pay his bills, got his leg fixed, but he lost his apartment. So if I give him help, well, he probably or might take that money and save it up, and eventually, because some of these panhandlers can make some decent money, he might save it up and rent an apartment, and then go get himself a job and become a productive member of society and create actual wealth instead of draining me of my wealth. So that is the difference between, that is one of the differences, not the only one, but I think one of the key differences between charity and altruism. Altruism tends to be an non-discriminatory way of just giving to others who have needs, while charity is very discriminating, or should be, and only to those who will use that money, those resources, to help better themselves and improve their situation.
Mm-hmm. So an altruistic person actually is so selfish because he wants people's approval so bad that it will actually lead to his demise.
He's misinformed, uninformed. The wrong word used there was selfishness. Oh. Because if he was really selfish, he would be acting in a way that benefited his well-being to the mm-hmm. maximum. And he would only give to those in a discriminatory manner that would improve their lives and in turn the lives of everyone. So it doesn't improve our lives to have more homeless people upon more homeless people because they're incentivized to be homeless, because people are constantly indiscriminately giving them money simply because they have needs. So actually people have a big misunderstanding of selfishness. What that person is, that altruistic person, is they're misguided. Misguided individual. And they're actually doing more harm to the world than good, because they are enabling people to continue along a cycle of self-deprecation and just continuing poverty and impoverishment and addiction. You're not helping this person. You're going to take the money and go buy heroin. Gonna take it to go buy drugs. And you got needles lying all over the sidewalk. Kid steps on the needle, gets AIDS, gets sick, and dies. Or you got shit everywhere because all these homeless people have nowhere to take a dump. And so that spreads disease. And, this people who think they're helping by being altruistic and encouraging social welfare programs and indiscriminate charity are actually doing more harm to what we would call society, because society doesn't actually exist. We are just individuals choosing to live in the same geographic area, but they're doing more harm than good to their communities, much more.
Absolutely, absolutely. Are there any closing remarks you would like to leave for the audience?
Oh, me? I don't know.
We need something that's philosophical, that's going to get off their asses. And because one of the guys in the chat said, a lot of young people in their 20s, man, they're lost. And like the guy in the chat said, it's not over, man. If you're in your 20s, it's not over for you by a long shot. Heck, in my 20s, I was a homeless living in a car out in L.A. Oh, you know, I didn't start this whole internet thing until I was 31. You know, you were talking about 10 years ago. So your 20s, man, just because you're in your 20s, I mean, doesn't mean it's over if you ain't got nothing going for you, man. So we just want to give these people, you know, a goodwill message at the end, really.
Everything I've been talking about this entire show has been applied philosophy.
Absolutely. Yes.
So people tend to think because I joke a lot and I'm somewhat comedic at times that's not philosophy. They're not mutually exclusive, okay? That's number one. Number two, so I've been doing philosophy this entire time. People tend to have in their head this idea that philosophy is somehow something profound and abstract sounding. Really, no. not applied in a practical way as I do. But I can say this, there is hope. You simply have to be able to see it. You have to look at yourself. You have to look at what your skills and your abilities are. And then you have to think to yourself. You have to map that to reality by asking yourself questions. I suggest you check out Socrates and the mm-hmm. Socratic method. Okay, this is what I'm good at. I'm good at building things, or I'm good at understanding complex structures. I am good at predicting things. What jobs are best served by ability to predict? What jobs are best served by an ability to understand complex systems? What jobs are best served by having a deep understanding of people and being good with people? And then extrapolate that into reality. Look at the jobs out there. Look at the careers out there. The things that are best served by what you're good at, that you can make the most money, that you can have the most ability to use those skills and abilities you have. Like I said, self-knowledge is key. Once you know yourself, everything else falls into place. And the best way to know self is to sit down and look within and ask questions and explore your life and look at the things you've accomplished, achieved. Why did I achieve these things? Why was I able to accomplish this? And that is because I have this ability. Explore that. And once you find through that self-exploration what you're good at, then start asking yourself more questions about how, what areas I can apply these skills, these abilities in the real world. How can I monetize my skills? How can I monetize my abilities? That's where you want to start off with. Self-knowledge is foundational, it's key, and that is the starting point. And if you can do that, if you have the courage to do that, oh, there's plenty of hope. But it does take courage to look at self, to look within, because some of us don't always like what we see. But you see, that's the great thing about knowing yourself, because once you know yourself, you can then change the things you don't like.
Now, one of the last things I want to talk about here, and I'm going to make it really quick. Okay. Do you think a lot of people, young people out there, are deathly afraid of TMW? TMW stands for too much work. Is it possible that they just don't want to put in the work?
I think there is some of that because growing up, they didn't actually learn about graft. I do think that's some of it. I do think there's an aspect of that with some young people, that they didn't grow up with that father figure who understood that I needed to give them chores. They need to get a job at 14. They need to be making some kind of money, even if it's just working 10, 15 hours a week, washing dishes at a restaurant nearby at 14, or if it's hauling wood or chopping wood for me and I give them an allowance. That kind of old school mentality that you get from a father that creates the structure and understands what kids really need to learn in the real world practically, the kind of lessons that need to be applied, that's non-existent today. Like I said earlier in the show, 12% of kids are growing up in households with two or more parents of the opposite sex. And that's opposite sex. That doesn't mean all those people are actually married either. And how many of those men of that 12% of kids that are growing up in these houses with an actual father present, how many of them are red-pilled? How many of them are men who haven't been cucked, who are not blue-pilled? Not too many. So kids are not learning early on in life these lessons about graft and hard work and what you need to do to be successful, the kind of lessons that a father is supposed to teach their kids. It's just not happening like it used to. So I do think that is an element. Absolutely, absolutely.
Guys, this stream, this 3-hour stream, has given you the solutions that the big people on YouTube, whether it's I'm not talking down about AMS or Fresh and Fit or, you know, Hamza Yusuf or anybody, but this 3-hour live stream just gave you the solution to your life, which is, like TRP said, guys, know yourself. Know what you're capable of. Find out what you're great at. Take it to the max. Find out what you're bad at. Minimize it, okay? You know, you take me, for example. I'm not good at accounting. I get accountants, you know. I'm not going to try to be something I'm not. You know, I get an accountant if you're not good at being an accountant. I'm a programmer. I'm taking it to the max. See, you guys out there, find out what you're good at. Take it to the max. What you're not so good at, you know, minimize it. You know, you take me, for example. As you guys can clearly hear, you know, I speak with a lisp. So you guys are not going to see me going up to some girl at the bar, you know, spitting game at her, because it's all going to come out wrong. So when you find something you're not good at, guys, minimize it. Find out what you're good at. Take it to the max. Focus on yourself. Now, this one last thing, TRP, I really don't want to bring it up because it's going to take time, but I think I have to bring it up. What do you tell to these guys out there who don't have a father figure. Their mother was taking them around from, you know, one community to another. She had guys coming in, you know, out in and out the door. They never had a father figure. They never had an uncle. They never had a grandfather. What do you tell these guys out there who never had a father figure at all?
That's tough because
that's really
a lot
tough.
Of them are already fully cooked. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
You're a grown man. It's probably a little too late to get a father figure, not necessarily too late to find a mentor, but you want to be very careful as a grown, fully cooked man or woman or any fully cooked human for that matter, when it comes to going to finding father figures, mentors, gurus, life coaches, anything in that regard. You want to be very careful because you're ripe for being taken advantage of. Because you have resources and these are people that want them. So there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there. So I kind of really do give the same advice I gave before. The start of wisdom is self-knowledge. So if you want to be mature, if you want to learn correct and applicable life lessons, it all starts with yourself. If you're 25 years old, it's probably a little too late to get a daddy, and I don't think you should have one at 25 anyway. That's a chosen one because you're going to tend to infantilize yourself around that person, and that's not going to really be a good thing or conducive to your well-being. But what I would suggest is knowledge. Is seek out as many different and varying viewpoints as possible. And don't let yourself become ideologically or let your sense of self become entwined with any kind of teachings that other people have. Learn from others. Learn from the mistakes that they've made. That's another way that you gain wisdom. Smart person learns from other people's mistakes, all right? They don't fall off a cliff so they know if it might fucking kill you and it'll bust a bunch of your bones up. They somebody else fell off their fucking cliff. Now I know I got to be careful around that fucking cliff. I don't need to fall off myself to learn that lesson. So a really smart person learns from the mistakes of others, learns as much as they possibly can. So my advice to you is become an autodidact, study, educate yourself, explore the subjects that interest you, and become as well-versed in them as possible. This will give you self-esteem. This will give you confidence, mastering knowledge, gaining wisdom. And just explore yourself and find out what you enjoy. It's not just what you're good at, but you also have to find what you enjoy. There's quite a few things I'm good at, but I don't do them because I don't enjoy them. So there's a number of different things you have to do in this life to be happy. And it's not just the things you're good at, but also do I enjoy these things or not? And all of these things we found in time through exploration of self, and also use the experiences of others to teach you and inform you about what you're good at, what you understand, and what you enjoy.
Absolutely. I was married for a month. Granted, it was a couple of years ago. Granted, it was in Egypt. I am telling you guys, do not do the same mistake I did and get married in today's climate, especially with the modern female. Sir, the last question, absolute last question here, and you're totally okay to answer it or not. Were you ever married?
No, but I came so I came close twice. One, and I would probably say there was only one woman in my life I actually had what I would call real love for. This was quite some time ago. It came very close. We were together about 8 years, but that didn't work out. So, no, I've never been married. Close, but no cigar.
Okay, hopefully you never will get married.
No. Yeah, oh, hell no. Are you kidding? Get the hell out of here. A guy that gets married in today's climate would have to be suicidal.
Yes, true. 100%, 100%. Well, TRP, it's great to have you on this live stream. This is the first live stream I ever did. This is something I want to do in the future, time permitting, is have amazing content creators here on MGTOW TV that we highlight. This was our first broadcast. I know we had some audio issues. It was all on my part. Luckily, TRP recorded this on his side, so we're going to upload this to our respective channels. You're going to have the full audio with absolutely God willing. no problem. So this is something I plan on doing with other content creators as well, time permitting, because I'm working so busy on MGTOW TV. But this is something I want to do at least once or twice a month. One of the last things I just wanted to say to everybody here on MGTOW TV, you guys are saving lives, because I get the emails. I know for a fact that you content creators out there, you are saving lives. You are changing lives for the better. And I thank you. And society as a whole should really be thankful for everybody on MGTOW TV. TRP definitely does his share and more. I mean, this live stream in the past 3 hours. Guys, please don't pay some rando on the internet $1,000 an hour. We just gave you free advice, okay? Best advice. Don't pay somebody $1,000 on the internet. Please don't do that.
Yeah, occasional donation is nice, but that's crazy. Especially yes. When most of that advice is self-serving, and that it's not going to lead you down a path of being able to find your own answers.
Absolutely. That's another thing, guys, is that when I tell you guys all the time, even the guys who privately emailed me and stuff like that, they ask me, Amr, what's the best way to support you? And I tell them the best way is to support the content creators, because eventually, you know, 5%, 10% is going to find its way to MGTOW TV, because obviously we make commission off of super chats and boosting. So the best thing to do, guys, give to the content creators, booster videos. You can super chat in their comment. It's not only for live streaming, okay? That's really the best way to help out the whole ecosystem, is donate to the content creators, guys. And you have to keep in mind, you know, $1, $5, that goes very far. For example, you know, I get my coffee from Cumberland. It's $1. In fact, if you get a coffee from the McDonald's app, you know, I'm not promoting McDonald's or their app, but you can get, you know, you can get their coffee, iced coffee, big size, for $1 off the app. So you guys see, you know, if you donate $1, it can go towards somebody's coffee. So, and coffee makes everybody's day. In fact, I'm still drinking my coffee right now.
It's how I'm able to continue making content. That's the only way.
Yeah, man. Yeah, go
if I didn't
ahead.
Have coffee, oh my God, I'd be a fucking zombie among the walking dead. Oh boy, I need my coffee for sure.
Yeah, you guys would not know how grateful all of us would be if you bought us a cup of coffee, to be honest with you.
That's true.
All right, DRP. Another thing I have that you might like is that our tool right now, Grabber, I don't know if you ever used Grabber or not, but you can now grab videos from BitChute. So a lot of the videos you do on BitChute, like your analysis on China and what's going on, you know, MGTOW TV isn't just about women. We have to move past women a little bit. It's good to talk about women every now and then for the newbies or a refresher, but I think we need to start talking about, you know, what's coming down the pike. So on MGTOW TV, you have a tool called Grabber. You know, if you want to get some of your videos from BitChute over, you know, you just put the link from BitChute and it will copy itself over. You don't have to do anything other than two or three quick, you know, copy, paste, click, click, and it's mission accomplished.
I wasn't aware. I'll definitely look into that for sure.
Yeah. When you go to your upload section, you know, it's going to say Grabber. It used to be for YouTube only, but now it's for BitChute. Actually, Grabber is now for like 40 different platforms, including Odyssey, Rumble. Oh, yeah, guys. I'm innovating every day. I'm innovating on MGTOW TV. Yeah, sure, you're not going to see it for a while, but every day I am innovating on MGTOW TV. I'm not going to rest on our laurels, okay? And neither should anybody out there, to be honest with you.
Sounds good. Can I mention just one other thing? My I do a weekly podcast. Currently, I do it on DLive. I suggest you guys. I have a website, actually, www.therealistphilosopher.com. So yeah, I've had my own website for years now. So if you go to therealistphilosopher.com, there's a whole bunch of links in the upper right-hand corner. I suggest anybody out there follow me on at least Facebook and Twitter, and that way you can be kept abreast of any new content that I create. And whenever I do a podcast, I also put an announcement beforehand on Twitter and Facebook. So if you just follow me on those two, you'll know when I'm doing a live podcast or when I post new content. So I suggest you go check out my website, therealistphilosopher.com, and at least follow me on Facebook and Twitter if you can.
Oh, and in the private message system, send me those links. And when we put this video finally up there, I'm going to pin it. That way they have all your information right there and right in front of them in a pinned comment.
Cool, cool. And also you get to see me occasionally argue with pinhead leftists, which I admit is some low-hanging fruit. But it's funny as hell sometimes to watch the exchanges with these people. So that's another bonus if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter.
Cool, guys. So, yeah, man, follow TRP. Like I said, when this live stream, God willing, goes up as a video, I'm going to have all his links over there. And, guys, start supporting the individual content creators. I mean, there are guys out there paying some InstaThought $20,000 a month for a booty pic. We're just asking, you know, maybe a cup of coffee. We'll be happy with that. So
it's something. It's just a little amount. We're not asking for much. Just a bit.
Everything helps, gentlemen. This is how we make sure this ecosystem stays healthy and that we're able to give you content. Like Sandman says in his videos, you know, if you help out the content creators, they will continue to produce, to output content for you, which is good, not just for you, but for society as a whole. Because you guys won't believe the number of people who are coming into the Manosphere. In fact, I have a website called manosphere.tv that I'm waiting to release. In a perfect world, we just focus on MGTOW TV, but I understand there are people out there who just don't like the label MGTOW for whatever reason. This is why I created Manosphere TV. But there are so many people coming into the Manosphere. And, you know, we OGs like TRP, Sandman, Rare Breed Theory, Line of MGTOW, RPM, TFM, you know, Terrence Pop, you know, we gotta be there for them. Otherwise, you know, a flavor of the month is gonna come in and tell them, hey, if you pay me $1,000, I'm going to turn you from a beta male to Mr. Yo-Yo-Yo, homie, yo, I'm alpha.
It doesn't work that way. If only it was that easy.
Oh, I wish it. You know what? These people want it to be that easy. It's like the people who believe, you know, you might laugh at me for this, TRP, but when I was young, you know, I was always tall. I wanted to be taller. I'm that retard who actually bought pills to make you taller. Let me tell you something. They didn't work.
Yeah, I know. They don't work. Yeah, I could have told you that. Too bad you didn't know me back then. Yeah, right?
And we're telling you right now, guys, paying some random on the internet $1,000 to turn you from beta to alpha, not going to work, guys.
Yeah, you'll have an easier time going to the doctor and having him do that leg lengthening surgery, which can actually make you taller, but is extremely, extremely difficult, painful, and takes a long freaking time, as every week they turn that little pin a centimeter, and that's how much your bone will grow each freaking week or month or whatever. You have an easier time doing that than you will changing via somebody else telling you how to do so.
Yeah, guys, and one last thing. I don't want to take this stream in that direction at all, but if you're going to pay people like $5,000, $10,000 for a boot camp, take that money, get plastic surgery, get hair transplant, get LASIK to get rid of the glasses. Don't pay people $5,000 for a freaking boot camp, guys. I'm telling you right now, somebody who did it before, you can go to Tijuana, you can go to Eastern Europe, you can literally pick some of the most beautiful women in the world out of a lineup for $100. You know, I actually was going to sleep with a girl at a brothel in Bucharest. It just didn't feel right for me, but she was right there, available for $80. No need to pay some random $5,000 to take you out to freaking Las Vegas, okay, guys?
I wouldn't recommend the LASIK. The other stuff, maybe not. But the LASIK will definitely be a good idea. Being glasses free, that's definitely a step toward
it. I did LASIK, and I'm telling you guys, LASIK was the best thing I ever did in my life. I was a minus 7 1/4. You know, TRP will tell you, you know, minus 7, you're pretty much blind, man. Once I did that LASIK, woo, boy, life changer. Mm-hmm. And this was about 15 years ago. So now it probably got better and cheaper, I guess.
It has. That's another way to use your resources to improve your life, to make positive changes.
How about hair transplants? Let's end with hair transplants. What about for hair?
I don't think that's a great idea, just from my own point of view. I think it's getting a little too shallow and focusing on things that are not that important. I think if you're getting to the point where you're, I mean, hey, to each his own. This is just my two cents. But I don't think hair transplants are really a big necessity. Number one, if it's something that's going to make you feel better about yourself, then you're probably focusing on the wrong things in regards to what validates you or what gives you self-esteem. Number two, a lot of broads like cue balls. They got no problem with a cue ball if you got a good body. Probably be better off getting liposuction or working on yourself in regards to diet and exercise. If you've got a good physique, you don't need a lot of hair.
Yeah, that's true. When I go to the pub, I see bald guys all the time. But their physique, I mean, they have an attractive face. They got a killer physique. So it's not like, you know, they're overweight, fat, ugly, and bald. No, right. You have to be like top tier bald. Okay, guys?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, honestly. Your weight and your physique is something that you can control to a large extent. Hair loss, I really don't worry about it. I'm not that fixated on it. I mean, you can see my hair is, I've got a hell of a lot less of it than I did even 10 years ago. I'm not concerned about it, really.
And last thing, guys, absolute last thing. If you're into your 30s and you're sluggish, you got that belly pouch, but you don't drink alcohol, look into TRT. Look into a testosterone replacement therapy if you're into your 30s. Like I said, I'm doing TRT. I've been doing it for over a year and a half, guys. It's literally a life changer. It doesn't change who you are as a human being by any means. It simply makes your body right, and it does give you that energy, that focus, that stamina. And I'm telling you guys, you'll add muscle. I added 10 pounds of muscle, and I wasn't even going to the gym because I was so busy with MGTOW TV. So look into TRT if you are into your 30s and you just got that belly, you feel sluggish. Look into TRT, especially if you take anti-estrogen blockers. I'm on them myself. I know a lot of people out there say, Amar, don't say you're on anti-estrogen blockers. It's not going to make you look good. I don't care. I'm here to make sure you guys out there benefit from this knowledge.
Yeah, we got enough estrogen out there already. We don't need more of it, that's for sure.
Exactly, guys. Cool. TRP, I thank you so much for coming out today, spending, you know, almost 4 hours with us. It was amazing. This actually went a lot better than I thought. I thought I was going to be like, okay, what to ask him? I mean, we segued into a lot of good stuff. And, of course, you did what you're good at, which is deliver, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Amazing.
Thank you, sir. And like I said, in the PM, send me over the information. And when I get this video from you, I'll put this information in the video. That way they can see all your links in the pinned comment. My battery is at 2% right about now. So after we shut this down, guys, I'm probably going to go to the Beta Male Cafe or not to the pub or something.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, man. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you, audience, for showing up. TRP, you were fabulous, and I'm going to talk to you later, my friend, okay?
All righty. Thank you for having me. You have a good evening now.
You too. Take care. Be safe out there.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.